Are there any other nominations? Okay, I would like to announce that Ms. Winnie Mabila will be the acting chairperson for today's meeting, and I would like to request her to come over and preside over today's meeting. Thank you.
Let me take this opportunity and thank members for appointing me as the acting chair of this committee. I think we have to proceed with our program, our agenda. Now on item number 3, which is apologies. I'll request the secretary to indicate the apologies that have been tabled.
We received one apology from Mr. Manny DeVaters. He's out on parliamentary business on an international oversight trip.
That is an apology that we have so far received. Can we proceed with our, I don't know, members, do you accept the apologies presented? Honourable Member Ngene?
Yes, we do accept the apology. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Let's move to item number 4, the briefing by the South African Civil Aviation Authority on the annual report. I think as members were aware that at the beginning of each and every financial year, departments and public entities are expected to table their strike plans and their operational plans. And their budgets to the committee, in other words, to parliament. Then 6 months after the end of the financial year, departments and the public entities also are expected to table the annual report to parliament, indicating to what extent did they have they been able to implement their plan, to what extent have they been able to use their budget, so that at the end of the day, as this committee, as parliament, we are able to oversight whether the public entity has made it or break it. Without the waste of time, then I will request the CEO of the South African Civil Aviation Authority to introduce the team and also to zoom into the business of the day on the presentation of the annual report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, I'd like to introduce my team. You're looking at it. Unfortunately, our chairperson couldn't make it for the meeting today, and we were going to give this presentation to the Minister at our AGM, which was held a couple of weeks ago. I've modified it slightly and updated it, and we'll be presenting it to the Portfolio Committee. The purpose of the presentation is to brief in particular the new members of the Portfolio Committee on the mandate of the Civil Aviation Authority, which I'll call CA for now, the vision and mission, the structure, our strategic objectives as determined by the Board, key functions of the CAA, our key achievements during the previous financial year, and our operational performance during the last financial year. And finally, our financial performance in 2008-2009. Chair, just to inform the honourable members, the Civil Aviation Authority used to function under three different acts until this point in time. In 2008, the then Minister of Transport, the Honourable Jeff Hadebe, gave an instruction that these three acts should be harmonised and combined into one act, updated and modernised, and to make sure that our primary legislation meets all of the requirements of the International Civil organizations, Convention on International Air Transport. But the objectives basically haven't changed. The position of our new act is that President signed it into law on the 28th of May 2009, becoming Act 13 of 2009, and we're expecting that it will come into effect. The majority of the act will come into effect on the 1st of November 2009, which is in a few days' time. But our objectives of the CAA are to control and regulate civil aviation, to oversee the functioning and development of the civil aviation industry, and specifically to control, regulate, and promote civil aviation safety and security. Our vision is to be a credible and dynamic world-class civil aviation regulator. And our mission statement is to promote and maintain a safe, secure, and sustainable civil aviation environment while adhering to international standards, to regulate and oversee the functioning and development of the industry in an efficient, cost-effective, and customer-friendly manner, and to promote an enabling environment for transformation and development within the aviation industry. The current CAA structure, obviously we have the Minister of Transport, the CAA Board, which reports to the Minister of Transport, and then my current role consists of two positions, one of that of Commissioner of Civil Aviation, in which I report directly to the Minister of Transport on matters of aviation safety and security, and as the CEO of the CAA, I report to the CAA Board. On the left-hand side, you'll see in yellow that we have an independent accident investigation unit. And last year, I put in place a safety advisory committee to evaluate the output of the accident investigation unit and make recommendations to me as the commissioner before we release the accident reports to the public. We have four technical divisions: air safety operations, aircraft safety, air safety infrastructure, and aviation security, and then a number of support divisions. Under the new act, my position will be known as the Director of Civil Aviation and will again report directly to the Minister in terms of aviation safety and security and report to the Board in terms of corporate governance. The change now is that the new Act makes provision for the creation of an Aviation Safety Investigation Board. This is in accordance with Annex 13 of the Chicago Convention on International Aviation, which requires that a board totally independent not only of the Civil Aviation Authority but also independent of the Department of Transport is created to investigate accidents and to make recommendations. Honourable members and Chair, the purpose of this is to ensure that in coming up with findings, even if they may implicate that either the CA itself or even the Department of Transport have not performed adequately or have not created the correct regulations, that this board can report to the Minister freely and without interference from either the CA or the DOT. And this is the case that we have in the majority of countries in the world. Our strategic objectives are to comply with the legislation and the International Civil Aviation Standards and Recommended Practices, otherwise known as SARP, to accelerate transformation and promote a value-based organization, to improve corporate governance, financial sustainability and empowerment, to attract, develop and retain skilled human capital, to improve internal systems and processes, to increase assistance to improve Africa's civil aviation capacity, and to improve stakeholder relations. The board of SARCA has concentrated on governance issues within the CAA. These include PFMA compliance and financial liquidity, critical vacancies filled and confirmed. In 2007, members that were on the portfolio committee at that point in time will recall that the CAA hadn't had a CFO for quite a period of time, and in fact had been without a CEO for quite a period of time. We're happy to report from the beginning of 2008 that all the critical vacancies have been filled and are functioning well. Since 2008, as you're aware, all government entities were required to report directly to the Auditor General in terms of annual audits, and that happened in the 2007-08 financial year, Chair, and we're happy to report that in the previous financial year, not the one under review at the moment, we received an unqualified report, and very happy to report again that for the 2008-09 financial year, an unqualified report, audit report was received as well, with no significant findings. We've also ensured that the authority has reserves to fund between 4 to 5 months' expenditure with no income, which is highly likely. That would mean that every single passenger flying into or in South Africa was on the ground and they didn't fly at all, because that's where we get the majority of our revenue from. The recommended reserves after doing international benchmarking is to have reserves for 30 days of expenditure and about 10 million rand provision for capital expenditure. At the end of the financial year, we had a total of about 98 million in reserve, which was, as I say, was between 4 to 5 months' expenditure and sufficient money for any capital expenditure required, putting us in a very, very healthy financial position. For this reason, and also at the request of industry, when we drew up our 2008-09 budget, we actually budgeted for a loss of approximately 9 million rand for the financial year under review, which was approved by the Treasury as required in terms of the PFMA. But we also need to point out that that loss included depreciation, and so the Treasury was very happy for us to budget for that specific loss. Key functions of the Civil Aviation Authority are to meet South Africa's obligation in terms of the International Convention by ensuring compliance to the 8 ICAO critical elements. And in a slide about to come, Chair, I will show exactly what those elements are and what the CAA was audited on in 2007. We're required to develop civil aviation regulations and technical standards to give effect to these obligations. We issue air operating certificates to air operators. That could be an airline, such as South African Airways, or it could be a small 2-aircraft training organization in a very small town somewhere. But every single air operator that operates in the country has to be audited by us. They have to send us documentation and prove to us that they are worthy to and capable of operating an air service. We issue approvals to air maintenance organizations. Once again, when a new maintenance organization wants to start business, they have to comply with all of our regulations, which includes putting in place a structure which is sustainable of people that are suitably qualified to conduct maintenance for the type of aircraft that that they will be looking after. And we then audit them on a regular basis as well to make sure that they are maintaining those aircraft according to our regulations and our technical standards. We issue approvals to airport operators such as AXA or the private airports such as KMIA in the Lowveld, and air traffic services providers, which also would include ATNS and any of the other private air traffic service providers. We set the syllabi, examination and testing standards for pilots, flight engineers, maintenance engineers, air traffic controllers and cabin crew. We issue licenses to all of the above, and we appoint designated examiners throughout the country to perform tests, licensing tests, on our behalf on all of the crew crew and technical personnel indicated above. We have oversight and we conduct regular audits on all civil aviation related activities, including airports, air traffic services, and aviation security. And we ensure compliance by all of the above to the Acts, regulations, and technical standards. And we then also effect enforcement of the legislation. So we not only create the regulations, we are required to enforce them as well. And to that end, we do have a full-time enforcement team that makes sure that any violations of our regulations are dealt with. Key achievements during the 2008-09 financial year was that we brought the status of our aviation legislation in South Africa to a point, certainly in terms of primary legislation, where we are now 100% compliant with all international requirements. As you may know from the media, every time an aircraft even bends a propeller, that ends up somewhere on the front page. Certainly if it's a more serious crash or there's a fatality involved, it achieves a huge amount of publicity. And we realized that the majority of the accidents occur in the general aviation sector. And that is very distinct from our commercial operations, which are conducted by our larger airline operators, including the low-cost carriers. So we introduced an initiative called the General Aviation Safety Initiative last year, and I will report back a bit on that shortly. We significantly improved our customer relations during the financial year under review. Feedback from industry, feedback in the aviation websites and the aviation media have been very positive after having been negative for many years. In fact, when I first joined the CAA almost 2 years ago, I was shown a video clip of an air show where they had built this little house in the middle of the runway, and pilots would come past in their light aircraft and drop flower bombs in this little house. And written on the side of the house was CAA in big letters. We weren't very well liked by the general aviation industry in particular, but I'm very happy to report that that has changed, and we're now getting very good reports in the aviation media and a lot of support as well. Obviously for us a very important feature of the financial year was to have a fully unqualified external audit report. Deloitte conducted the audit on behalf of the Auditor General and under the supervision of the Auditor General. And as I mentioned before, we had no significant findings. Our financial performance I will report on towards the end of this presentation. And I'm also very happy to report that our organizational stability is that the number of staff leaving the organization has reduced significantly in the last 6 months in particular. We had quite a lot of people leaving in 2008 and early 2009, but I must say that many of those that left realized that the CAA was not an organization where you could come to work all day, do nothing, take home your salary, and go back home in the evening. And I think many of them that left did so because they realized that our performance management system wouldn't allow them to do that anymore. And we have replaced them with very competent people, and we are satisfied that the organization has stability now in its employment situation. The status of legislation, I mentioned that we had three acts before. These are the three acts, pardon me, that are shown: Aviation Act, Civil Aviation Offences Act, and the South African Civil Aviation Authority Act. They were combined into one act, and members of the Portfolio Committee that were present last year were very much involved in that. And as I mentioned as well, the bill was signed into law on the 28th of May, and we're expecting it to come into effect, in fact, on the 1st of November. Now that has slipped by a month. Chair, I've got drop-down slides on the changes if required. I think we have quite a bit of time, but we can skip that if need be. Let's just basically show what that means. Changes were made to align the Act with annexes to the Chicago Convention. It addresses the separation of the Accident and Incident Division into a new independent entity that will be known as the Aviation Safety Investigation Board. It changes the appeal system, whereby now operators can lodge appeals to an appeal committee appointed by the minister and not to the commissioner. This is the final appeal system. There is still an appeal to the commissioner or the director as it is now. And we've also established an internal committee known as SCORE, or the Standing Committee on Regulation Rewrite, whose main aim is to ensure that internal processes and procedures of the CAA are aligned to the new Act. The Department of Transport has worked with us and has in fact guided us in this whole process, we've together have identified a process whereby we will do alignment of the regulations in accordance with the new Act in essentially three phases. The first phase is to replace all references to Commissioner with that of Director, and cross-reference to clauses of the new Act need to be changed, so wherever the regulations refer to any of the three previous acts, they have to be realigned. It is quite a large editorial task, and we'll be outsourcing that to an appropriate organization to do that for us. And I mentioned that we've established an internal committee that will then look at aligning our internal processes and procedures. And I may say at the same time, the SCORE has been tasked with looking at our major regulations which govern the operations, to simplify them, to make them less ambiguous. We do find that much of the non-compliance that occurs is because operators sometimes do not quite understand the requirements of existing regulations, and so we are spending a lot of time making sure that any ambiguities are taken out. Chair, I mentioned previously that the International Civil Aviation Organization started in 2005 a process known as its Universal Safety Oversight Program. Eight elements were identified, which are shown on the bottom here. Primary aviation legislation, specific operating regulations, civil aviation system and safety oversight functions, qualifications and training of technical staff, procedures and technical guidance, licensing and certification obligations, surveillance obligations, and resolution of safety concerns. And since 2005, countries around the world have been audited to see what the level of compliance is in terms of these eight critical elements. If I can start at the bottom, this was at the end of 2007, and the African states, as you can see, did not fare too well. Those were the ones that were audited, and not all the African states were audited. At the time that this was done, I think a total of 108 states had been audited. But the global average was not much better. That's the orange line that you can see just above that. And the trend follows very much what you find in the African states. The red line was the status of South Africa in July 2007, and as you can see, we were above the global average, good in certain areas, but in our primary and secondary legislation, we had something to be desired. In other areas where we were a lot better. So a program was put in place immediately after the audit to address all of the findings. And we set ourselves a target to surpass that of a country which is considered to be one of the safest in aviation, and that is Australia. And in 2007, Australia's position is shown by the yellow line. We're happy to report that having put in place many measures, including the new Act, we have achieved an average of about 94% compliance across all 8 critical elements. In primary legislation, we are 100% compliant. I do need to point out, however, that this is not a re-audited position. This is after we had submitted evidence to the International Civil Aviation Organization that we had effected changes to primary legislation, regulations, oversight functions, qualifications and training of technical staff, which at this point in time we're probably at 100% already. And across the board, the changes that we've made are our calculation of where we are in terms of compliance. And we believe that if we had an audit tomorrow, we would in fact be at least at this status, probably above that particular status. In terms of the regulations here, we're just waiting for the minister to sign off the huge pack of changes to regulations, and that will take us almost up to 100%. And in many of these areas here, we are intending to be at or close to 100% by the end of this financial year, which is March 2010. That will put us into the top 2-3% of the aviation organizations, the authorities within the world. And we're very proud of that particular achievement. We recently had what is known as a gap analysis by the International Civil Aviation Organization. The gap analysis normally takes 5 full days in which industry, including representatives from AT&S and AXA were there. Industry across the board, maintenance organizations, operators, Department of Transport and the CAA were there. I'm very happy to report that the gap analysis was actually completed within 3 days, 2.5 days, showing that ICAO is now very happy with our current status. We introduced the General Aviation Safety Initiative in 2008, and Madam Chair, just for background, I started my flying career in the mid-70s on light aircraft in general aviation. In 1980, I joined South African Airways, and I was there for 28 years, ending up as the General Manager of Flight Operations at South African Airways. And for many years, I didn't fly light aircraft, general aviation type of aircraft. When I came back into the CAA, when I came into the CAA in 2008 and started getting copies of all of the accident reports, I realized that from mid-1970s to the mid and late 2000s, very little had changed with regard to the cause of accidents in this particular sector. The things that pilots and engineers and the rest were doing back then were still being done last year. And so, taking a leaf out of the airline industry, and I was very involved in safety in the airline industry for many years, the safety initiatives, we brought together a team of experts, many of whom had both extensive airline experience and also general aviation experience, and put together the think tank to come up with ways of finding a way to address the accident rate in general aviation using the lessons learned from the airline industry. The forum has been in place for more than a year now, and I will show some figures shortly which show that we believe the initiative, together with other initiatives, are in fact working very well. In terms of our strategic objective of improving customer relations, We started a project to establish a wider industry presence throughout the country by providing regional offices. And I'm happy to report that we opened our first regional office in Cape Town on the 1st of September. The offices are located at Cape Town International Airport. We're renting space from AXA at a very high price. They won't give us a discount. But it is right next to the Avis office and very easily accessible to anybody coming to the airport. We introduced customer relation management or CRM software in late 2008, and we've included in all staff members' performance plans an index of customer relations. For example, we've set a target that for every 2 complaints that we receive, we have to receive at least 1 compliment. Now, anybody that's been involved in the service industry knows that that's quite a tall order. Normally you get a lot more complaints than you do compliments, but I'm very happy to say that that we're achieving in most of our areas that or even better. So we're setting a very high standard for ourselves, and we'll keep on in raising the bar on that particular standard as well. And we introduced 3 additional industry forums, which are security. We have an aviation security managers forum that meets every 2nd month. Non-scheduled operators, which make up a large portion of the larger general aviation operator, and aircraft maintenance organizations, and we have about 300 of them in South Africa. This is a bit of a busy slide, Chair. It shows some stats going back to 1980. But there are 2 lines really that are significant. The blue line that I'm showing there shows the number of aircraft on the South African Civil Aviation Register, which in the last 28 years has more than doubled. And the red line on the top are the total number of accidents in each year. And you'll see from about 2003, with particularly the increase in the number of very small sport aircraft, we've seen a large increase in the number of accidents. But if you divide the number of accidents by the number of aircraft on the register, you get this red line at the bottom. You see that it's relatively flat until 2008. Well, we weren't happy with just having a flat rate. We decided we needed to do a lot better than that. What I'm about to show you shows from 2005 the cumulative number of accidents in South Africa or on South African registered aircraft, which may be operating abroad as well. So if you add the number of accidents in January to those of February, you come to a new total. And so every month you see as the line goes up, it means that there were accidents in that particular month. In that month, because the line is a bit steeper, there were a bit more, and then it leveled off a bit. But in 2005, pretty steady. 2006, the line was pretty much the same. 2007, and then you may recall from the media, 2008 was not a good year, although the total accident pattern remained pretty much the same and again reflects the increase in the number of aircraft on the register. But in 2009, we're seeing a significant drop. We believe that's for at least 4 different reasons. One is that we now employ more than double the number of inspectors in all areas of flight operations, maintenance organizations in particular, and we conduct 3 times the number of audits that the CA used to previously compared to 2007. We also believe that with the large number of accidents that happened in, or fatal accidents that happened in 2008, September, October 2008, the industry got a bit of a wake-up call. And we also recognize that there has been a reduction in activity in this year because of the world financial situation. We estimate that to be about 15%, which would even then put this line just slightly above where we are at the moment. which is showing a very positive trend that we obviously are very keen to see that trend is sustained. But more importantly, we have been concentrating not just on the accidents, because many of the accidents that are reported there are minor accidents. No injuries, no fatalities, just simply accidents that happened. Somebody tackling on the side of the runway, for example. So we really look at, oh, thank you so much, at recording the fatal accidents. And I'll quickly show the trends. 2005, 2006 was not a good year. 2007 was a bit better. In 2008, you'll see September, October in particular. The numbers just went way off the trends. And it was round about here that we introduced the General Aviation Safety Initiative. But this was very of great concern to us, that particular trend. Chair, we're very happy to show that in 2009, our fatal accident rate is less than half of what it was for the corresponding period, the first 9 months of last year, and in fact of the previous years as well. And we're almost back down to the 2005 level. And then besides the total number of fatal accidents, obviously, every single human life to us is very important, and so we do look at the total number of fatalities. 2005 was not a bad year. 2006, 2007, and 2008, as we said, was a particularly bad year. A number of the aircraft that crashed in September and October were large aircraft. There was a 7-seater aircraft, 17-seater rather, 17 people died on board aircraft crash in the DRC, South African registered, and a number of other aircraft had 9 or 6 passengers and crew on board, and that pushed the number of fatalities up quite significantly. We're very happy to report that this year we are way below any of the stats of the previous 5 years, and we are certainly being extremely vigilant to ensure that by the end of the year we end up with a very positive situation. And I would just like to state that this is not only the CA is doing. The whole aviation industry has really come together. In particular, AT&S that are here today have given a lot of support to ensuring that the overall aviation environment is a lot safer than it has been previously. Airports Company and all the other airports as well have made sure that the airport environment is as safe as it can be. And we're just hoping that this trend will be sustainable, not only for the rest of the year, but going forward from now on. That we will set a complete new baseline to work off. Chair, in terms of our surveillance obligations, I mentioned that we have oversight in 4 technical areas, and I'll briefly go into each of these. Air operators are dealt with by our air safety operator. Anyway, air, so it doesn't matter. Basically, we deal with large aircraft operators, known as Part 121. Smaller aircraft, Part 127, is helicopters, cabin safety, and then all training organizations. It shows the 2007 baseline number of audits that were completed. It shows on the top line the 2008-09 number of audits that were planned, and we're very happy to report that all of the audits that were planned were conducted throughout the year. We also oversee designated flight examiners, designated examiners for cabin crew, aviation medical examiners, and the flight inspection unit. And again, on all of the targets that were set, every single audit was conducted. In terms of our maintenance organizations, at the plan versus actual. On the large aircraft operators, we conducted a few more audits than were planned. On the Part 135, a few less. And I may just say that these numbers can vary because during the course of the year, an organization might go out of business. So you have an audit planned and you actually can't carry out the audit because it is out of business. Or you might get new organizations coming in as well, so you need to conduct the additional audits. But we're very happy with the level of the audits, and certainly we believe that the level of oversight in the last 2 years has improved dramatically, and we certainly believe that this has contributed greatly as well to the reduction in the number of accidents, fatal accidents that we've seen. These are larger and smaller aircraft maintenance organizations, and again, we are on target for all of the audits having been carried out that we're supposed to be carried out. In terms of aerodrome annual license renewal, we targeted 135, that's 135 licensed airports in the country. We did an actual 133, and two licenses were withdrawn because the operators of the airport were not able to comply to our regulations, and we went through their licensing status. And we conducted ad hoc inspections, and heliports and helipads were audited on demand. And we actually conducted a total of 5 inspections. Aviation security. Our aviation security team has grown quite significantly in the last 2 years because of new regulations that were introduced, and once again we've exceeded or got very close to the number of audits that were planned during the financial year. We do monitor, Chair, if I may say, we do monitor every single month at our EXCO meetings. All of the technical divisions are required to report back on exactly what their status of auditing is. So if in a particular month they do not meet their specific targets, they are required to catch up within a month or two just after that. New cargo regulations were introduced, and that's why we have a category now called cargo visitation. Sounds like something from a seance, but it means that they went to go and visit the cargo areas. So in terms of our broad-based black employment equity targets, since 2006, the targets have increased from 40% to 60% in the current reporting period, noting that many of our purchases that we make, which are sometimes big-ticket items, can only be sourced internationally. We do operate an aircraft, which is a nice business jet, which is filled to the brim with calibration equipment. We do all of the calibration of the navigation equipment for on behalf of AT&S, and all of the spares and equipment on board that aircraft, the calibration equipment, does come from international, and it's only available from international sources. But with the average trend in the aviation industry being only 26%, we believe at 60%, we're having a very, very positive effect on BBBEE in the aviation industry. And in fact, we managed to achieve 78% against our 60% target due to the supplier development program that we've implemented. Chair, if you'll remember, in the graph that I showed of the 8 critical elements of ICAO, most countries have been battling with technical personnel and skilled technical personnel in particular. One of the problems being is that the regulations, the international regulations require that you have an inspector on the flight operations side and on the maintenance side that is qualified on every single aircraft type that is flying on your register. And we have hundreds of different types, from 747 down to very, very small aircraft. And to try and find inspectors that have got the necessary experience on all of these aircraft is challenging. I'm very happy to report that we have met our targets in terms of being able to provide capacity to do 100% oversight. The targets that we've set ourselves for the current financial year, in other words, that's by the end of March 2010, is to create additional capacity so that we will have inspectors available to contribute to the creation of regional aviation safety authorities, otherwise known as RASAs. So that is our target. We are a bit slow on that. I'll show you in the financials that the economic downturn has had quite an effect on air travel in particular, and therefore we have had to delay the appointment of some of the technical personnel because we don't really need them at this point in time, and the regional organizations are still in the process of in the conceptual stage. So although we set the target, the numbers that we have at the moment are more than adequate to achieve all of our own targets in South Africa. During the 2008 financial year, we issued a total of 5,300 new licenses in the reporting period, bringing the total licenses within the country up to 22,442. And just to recap what these licenses are, all the various pilots' licenses, from student pilots, private pilots, commercial pilots, airline transport pilots, flight engineers, of which there are very few these days, it is a virtually obsolete profession, maintenance engineers, and cabin crew and air traffic controllers. There's been a 6% increase in the number of licenses issued during this reporting period when compared to the previous financial year, and we categorize the number of issued licenses in terms of gender and race, as depicted in pages 32 and 33 of the annual report sharing. It is available for members. I think it was circulated to everybody. In terms of stakeholder relations, we hold joint aviation awareness programs with many of the provincial authorities, Gauteng, Northern Cape, Limpopo, Free State, KZN and the Northwest. And the initiative is to ensure that key organizations maximize on available resources to create aviation career awareness, particularly amongst historically disadvantaged learners. Together with the Aero Club, there is a very comprehensive program that is being developed and put together and supported by the CAA. To introduce youngsters firstly to model aircraft flying. What we find amongst the young black boys and girls is that aviation doesn't seem to appeal to them. The bright ones all want to become doctors and lawyers and politicians, and we're finding it very difficult, and have been for the last 15 years, to get young black kids excited about aviation. But I'm very happy to report that a new program that has been in place for the last couple of years, sponsored by the National Lottery, has had very good success in introducing model aircraft, first of all, in building model aircraft, then building flying model aircraft, and the next step in that process is to take them to gliding clubs, where for a very cost-effective price you can actually teach youngsters to fly on a glider. Which is a lot more cost-effective than doing it on a powered aircraft. It also has a major advantage in that taking part in the gliding activity requires a whole day, a whole Saturday or a Sunday. And each person that's involved in the gliding activity becomes totally involved. They have to all help in sweeping out the hangars in the morning, cleaning the gliders in the aircraft, helping them push them out by hand, in fact, to the runway, and then as the glider is towed behind another aircraft or winch launch, you have to do what's called wing walking, so it has enough speed so that you can control the glider, and then it takes off. And it's a very community-based sport, and we're just finding that the youngsters that are coming into the program through the gliding path develop this love of aviation that we haven't seen previously in previous programs that have been done through the CETA, where youngsters have been identified, they've been given some money, they've been sent to a flying school, and some of them lose interest halfway. In fact, I think at one stage a few years back, the failure rate was something like 85%. So we're very excited about this new initiative, and we're getting a lot of support from industry as well. And we will be, from the CA's perspective, giving it our full backing. And then the logical progression from that is once the youngsters are qualified as glider pilots, is then to take them on to get their private license and their commercial license and bring them into the aviation industry. But to have that passion for flying that we believe is essential to create good commercial and airline pilots. We have been working very closely with the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, in particular the AFI regional office. There are two of them based in Nairobi and in Dakar in Senegal, to raise the standard of aviation oversight in Africa in particular. As you are aware, the safety record of aviation in Africa over the years has not been great. I'm not sure if I have a slide here, but I'm very happy to report that in 2008, for the first time, the accident rate in Africa is better than two other regions in the world, and any total of seven regions in the world. And in fact, the accident rate has come down from nine accidents, or we talk about hull losses where the old aircraft is destroyed, hull losses of jet aircraft in transport. It's gone from 9 a few years ago per million departures to 2.08 in 2008. We see that as a very positive step, and we've been working very closely with our counterparts, particularly in SADC, and providing assistance wherever we have been requested to, and last year we were able to assist Botswana, Namibia, Lesotho, Tanzania, and the DRC with some of the aviation programs, and we're available, in fact, to provide assistance to any of our African counterparts. Chair, we'll get on to the last section of the presentation, which is the statement of financial performance. I don't, unfortunately, have the budgeted figures, but I'll run very quickly through our position. As you can see, in 2009, the revenue went up from 179 million to 227 million. However, other income dropped considerably, so a lot of what we previously showed under other income was brought back into revenue. Employee expenses increased considerably because of the additional number of inspectors that we employed, and being highly skilled technical people, they come at a cost. The other expenses deal a lot with infrastructure that we require to house the additional inspectors. More inspectors doing more inspections require more travel, more meal allowances, more hotels, more car hire. And so that's why you've seen a significant jump. But it was budgeted for. On the other hand, we made a lot more money than we had budgeted for in terms of investment income. And we ended the year with a deficit of 13.6 million versus a budgeted deficit of 9.7 million. So we were 4 million less, worse off than we had budgeted for. Put it in perspective, we had budgeted for a revenue income some 27 million more than we actually achieved. And that was due to the fact that, I'm sure 18 will show their figures, and airports companies they presented already will show that the number of passengers that were estimated to fly in the financial year was about 18% down on what's actually flown. And so that affected our revenue stream significantly. But we contained costs. And I would also like to point out that this figure here includes 4 million subsidy from the CAA to the DOT. Now that might sound a bit crazy, but it costs about 12 million a year to run the accident investigation division. And DOT is meant to refund us 100% for the cost of the accident investigation division, but they only budgeted for about 7.8 million rand. And the DG asked us if we would graciously fund out of our reserve the additional cost here. So if we took that 4 million off, we would have been exactly on our budget share of 9.6, 9.7 million rand deficit. I may also point out, and we pointed this out at the AGM as well, that we are still carrying a much higher cost than we're recovering from the Department of Transport in terms of accident investigation. And we've asked them to make more funds available as they are required to in terms of the current financial agreement that we have for funding of accident investigation. Because we funded operational activity out of our reserves, our total net assets reduced by some 9 million rand. But as I pointed out previously, overall we sit with reserves and cash or in investments, which equate to 4 to 5 months of expenditure. Industry have been pushing us very hard to reduce that to 45 days. And so, in fact, we have delayed some of the increases in our tariffs to accommodate that because we do know that industry has been going through a very tough time. So, we originally budgeted for an increase in the passenger safety charge from 10 rand to 12 rand during the financial year, but in fact, we only went to 11 rand, an increase of 10% around about inflation. And we've delayed the increase in the user charges and the fuel levy. But 75% of our revenue comes from the passenger safety charge. But the authority has done very well in containing costs, and we're doing that even now as we speak. The revenue, budgeted revenue, is not there. We're hoping that we're seeing a bit of an upturn in the number of passengers carried in August and September, but we really can't expect much of a recovery until we see the effects of 2010 coming in the middle of next year. But generally, Chair, we're in a very strong financial position. It's a little bit small, but essentially we moved a lot of money that was sitting on call in 2007 and 2008 into investments. As you can see, we put 50 million rand into short-term instruments. We haven't gone crazy. They're very conservative investments. In fact, in terms of fixed deposits, we're not an investment organization. We just need to ensure that whatever cash we have gives us the best rate of return without putting the organization at risk. So, Chair, we have money on call through our investments, and at the end of the year we had 20 million, which is approximately 40 days of cash to fund activities. And so far this year, during the year, we haven't had to redeem any of our investments in order to fund operations. We've been able to fund our daily operations on a month-by-month basis from our income that we receive from our three main revenue streams. Chair, I've just included a list of abbreviations, and I'll be very happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Colin Jordan, for the information provided to this committee. Members, this is your opportunity to comment, to input, to interact on the presentation as made by Captain Jordan. Honorable Member Farrow will be the first.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, also thank you, as you said, to the presenter. I think that if I can just make a comment, being on this committee for some years now, that at last we've seen some sort of changes from what was a highly controversial organization, running from the Trevor Abrams through to the Messrs. Mayeda and Naidu, and there was corruption and everything going on there. And I'm just glad to see, Captain, that you finally brought things to a head and that we're now sort of looking where we should be looking, and hopefully we'll get some sort of results from it. So thank you very much for all the efforts that you've done. The questions I think that still come to mind is that we've now, 6 months since the amended act that we passed, and we've now got a new structure, and we have you as a director, and we have now an aviation investigations board, which has not yet been, as I understand, put into force. If it has, I think my question to you is why not, and when are we going to get that going? We've already had an accident only a week ago, and ideally that thing could have been in place to start doing the necessary independent investigations that need to happen. So, you know, it's a worrying factor because it's not only, you know, in your entity, but in a lot of these entities where boards are involved, there just seems a bureaucratic chain, and I don't blame you because the department's also involved in this process of trying to get those board members in place. And I think that, you know, if there's a message that needs to go out, we need to have a look at all those board chairs because some of them don't even, you know, they're actually operating illegally. And this is a very, very highly an important requirement in terms of the Act. I just wanted to comment on something that also tends to be happening in a lot of these entities that we've seen. And this is one of them where we've got actually reserves of 98 million, which I have no doubt is a necessity in terms of the mandate that they require. But we also mustn't go and start setting precedents, Captain. I think that for the department to ask you to fund the investigations into accidents is not correct. The Act says the department must pay. You must get that 4 million back, and I tell you why, because if it goes through the books and it becomes a precedent, then it's going to cause problems for you in the future, especially if there's major accidents which require money to be sourced from the department. That's their job, to do that to you. And the other thing that's going to happen, which is a trend that's taking place in a lot of these entities where they're actually taxing people, us, who go through the airports every time an aircraft lands, every time you buy a ticket, there's these levies that are coming off them to actually do your job, to do ACSA's job, to do ATNS's job, and to everybody else's job. But the tendency there is with, you know, with due respect to the regulator, that whenever you're going to go into a problem in terms of either cash flow or deficit, what you're going to do is you're going to add the levy, and for Joe Soap, the man in the street, is going to end up paying. And when we've got revenues like this in reserve, we should be looking at reducing this levy. Because it's absolutely frightening when you buy a ticket today and you look at what you actually pay for to go on the air trip. 90% of it goes on tariffs and levies, and, you know. And I think we must be just cautious of that. And I'm just asking you to really have a look at it with your board, because we want to reduce costs of flying in this country, not increase it. So everybody, you know, from the disadvantaged, you know, that haven't accessed air travel before can use it as a way of getting around as opposed to road travel. So that's the first thing. The second thing I want to raise, and I'm glad that you're actually doing a lot in that area, and it's something that's been of concern to me, and this is the question of training or setting certain the standards for the training of aviation technicians and maintenance engineers. Because as you know, they are like Rocky Norse manure. They just are not around anymore. We used to get them through the previous, you know, South African Air Force, places like that. We don't have them. And I'm just wondering whether you shouldn't be investing in that sort of area in terms of some of your reserves in training disadvantaged members of our community into those type of careers. You know, if a person's good with their hands and becomes mechanic, you can actually take those people and become aviation experts as well in terms of some training. And I raise this because of the failure, and I stress this point, the failure of our teacher to actually do that job. I wrote a letter when I went and visited one of our chartered companies here who appealed to us to see whether we couldn't get aviation technicians trained out of the technical colleges. And I have not even seen a thing. And now we hear the National Lottery Board is actually doing, in effect, a certain role of taking people and encouraging them into the aviation industry. This morning there was a fantastic interview with a young man from Venda, he was, on the SAFM, who's now flying these Oryx helicopters, and he's done so well as a pilot in there. And that's what we want to encourage, we really do. And I think we need to look at whether that teacher's not doing the job, or if it's not doing the job, then we must ask ourselves why and how we're going to solve that problem. Can I ask the third question? Okay. Aviation security. Now, your audits that you undertake there, I mean, we've seen what happened with the SAA crew going through the gates with drugs and business as well. What I want to find out is what involvement you have in ensuring that doesn't happen, okay, in terms of, I'm talking about crew on the one side, and what follow-up you've done to see that the loopholes have been blocked on that one, together with the other one which you never mentioned here, which we discussed in our last portfolio committee when AXA was here, and that's the whole aspect of the fire service. Because there's a CAIA condition or criteria or whatever you like to do it, which says that the airports have to be competent in certain levels of firemen, in certain compliance aspect of equipment, etc., so that if there is a fire on board an aircraft when we land there, that we have people that can put the fire out. Now, I was fortunate to go and have a look at Cape Town's airport recently. There's fire, I think, as part of an oversight visit that I made. And, you know, the problem there is that it's training again and staff. And I'm just wondering, you know, what has been done about that at the other airports, where there's vacancies of about 50%, I might add, across the board. If I took the whole of all of our airports, there's about 50% understaffing of fire men on those stations, which is a frightening thing considering the World Cup's about to come. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Member Farrell. Honourable Member Ngele, then followed by Lucas.
Thank you, Chair. It's almost the same question that has been asked by my colleague. As much as you are excited, I'm also excited about the young group being interested in that. I don't know whether it's piloting or what. I don't know how to call it. That is flying the aircraft. But what I would like to know, and maybe ask you to bring us numbers of how many of these are black and how many of these are female. Because I know there are white females that are flying aircraft. I don't know what to call it. In cars, we say drivers. Pilots, yeah. And I'm new in this portfolio committee. I still don't know how to differentiate things. Does the South African airlink come in your presentation? Is it part of your I don't know. Oversight, yeah. Do we include South African airlink or do you? Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. Then we have problems in the small airport. We have real big problems with South African airlink. I'll just, for instance, if it's raining, if it is windy, if you are in that flight, you will not land. Say you are from Johannesburg to Umtata. Yes, I understand well. But now, on the way you are directed to East London, and you expect SA Link or SA South African Airways to transport you from East London to Umtata because you are going to Umtata. But they will tell us that it is not their duty, it's the weather's duty, it's nobody's duty. They didn't do it purposely, it's the weather. Now we are left stranded. Quite a lot of things I would like to ask from the Air Link, but I don't, not today. Just that one.
Yes, thank you. I also appreciate this report because I'm relatively new in this portfolio. I said, I thought you were to mention the accident which happened in Durban unless it's out of your, or you haven't received the results or what, or these still investigations are still going forward. But the one that I'm really interested is that the training of the previously disadvantaged young people. I think we don't take this seriously enough. Because number one, it's not because they're not interested. It's because there was no opportunity. And we, at the moment, doing a lot of catch-up at our schools, which involves subjects like mathematics, which we have to do. But I would like to suggest that I think if you want to be serious about this, there should be a serious effort of going around to the colleges where this could be explained and encourage the young people to get it. Because I do know this for a fact. At the last military air show here in Cape Town, there were so many young people. They went and they got themselves involved, but there because they were interested. And so we need to encourage this and make them feel welcome into the industry. When I was young, there was such a thing as a job reservation because you couldn't do certain, you couldn't get into certain issue, certain professions. You could become a bricklayer, you could become a plasterer, you could, and you could become a doctor or a nurse, but you couldn't become a motor mechanic because there was job reservation, and that issue is still there indirectly, even now. You show the compliance of the international, where Australia, you said, was leading. And then you show the wonderful graph of how we've done in South Africa. Where does Australia fit into this, the latest graph? Has it improved or has it remained static? And the last one, I'm not sure whether I'm asking the right person here, is when these air hostess and the crew went into Heathrow and they were caught with drugs, what's the question I would like to ask? How did they go past OR? Because I think they should have been stopped at that point and not until they get to the UK. Thank you.
Honorable Governor, then you can turn and follow to respond to the issue.
Yeah, Chairperson Jeff. Two or three questions. Chair, I also want to appreciate the presentation that the Captain has made very clear. And I'm pleased that we look like we are catching up with international standards. The first question, Chairperson, is with regards to safety. Just in addition to the question that my colleague here has just raised about the aircraft, aircraft that crashed in Durban. There's been a number of recent crashes of small aircraft. Could the captain talk to that issue. Why has that been happening? Just beyond the question of the weather and so on, are there problems in terms of aircraft, and there have been fatalities in this aircraft? Secondly, you are on page 14. The BBBE target you're talking about, you are mentioning that purchases can only be sourced internationally, purchases of aircraft spares. Is it because they are cheaper if they are purchased from outside the country? Is it because we don't have a spares manufacturing industry within the country? And if the reason is because there is no industry inside the country that manufactures aircraft spares, what's the problem in us developing such an industry inside the country, so that we don't necessarily always have to import the spares from outside? I raise this question also mindful of the fact that there have been reports as well to the fact that in the course of the manufacture of the Sharjah Airport in Durban, a lot of imported imports had to be done in order to build that airport. And the question arises once more whether we don't have, for instance, our steel industry, is it not providing for the manufacture of these parts and for the building of airports inside the country? I'm not sure whether that also falls within your scope.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members for the questions. I'll certainly try my best to answer them and also clarify maybe many issues as well. To the first question on why the delay, the Act itself was passed in Parliament at the end of last year, but it did require the election to be completed in the inauguration of new president to take place before the act could be signed, and I think it was one of the first acts that President Zuma signed after he did take power. That then gave us the ability to start the process going forward. Part of the delay in determining the date of implementation of the act, there are logistics involved. Some of the regulations had to be reinvented completely. For example, we had a regulation around the Chief of Aviation Security. That position has fallen away completely. And a new act a new regulation had to be written taking into account the new structure. In doing that, we received advice from the state law advisor, from somebody in the state law offices, that although there was a deeming provision within the Act allowing any current regulation under the, any of the three previous acts to be carried across into the new environment, or the environment of the new act, that they would be carried across. We were told that no provision had been made to amend the regulations under the new act. That was a big shock, because we had, as I mentioned, a fat pile of regulations that were in the process of going to, or had gone to the minister already. And based on that original advice, we would have had to have got these changes through in terms of the old act. Because once the new act came into being, we would not be able to change any of the regulations. We could create completely new regulations, but we were unable to, or we were told we were unable to change any of the regulations. And in fact, that we would have to apply or make submissions to Parliament to have the act changed itself, which, as you know, is a very lengthy process. We didn't leave it there. In fact, we left it there for a month or two, but we then engaged external legal consultants who were very much involved in 2007-08 in advising the minister on which way the legislation should go, and we went to a very high level again in the state to advisors who gave us a way of being able to amend the regulations under the new act. So there was quite a bit of legal tap dancing that took place, but we believe we now have a solid basis to go forward, and which is why we have set the 1st of November as the implementation date for the majority of the act to come into being. The creation of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board is a DOT function, the ASIB. They have to advertise for the chair of the board. They have to go through the selection process. My only involvement as the director is to sit on the panel that will make recommendations to the minister. So it is a process that has to be driven by the DOT, and they are busy with that process at the moment. But it also does involve drawing up budgets, personnel structure. There is quite a significant process that has to be followed. And we were hoping that this could all be done by the 1st of April, by the beginning of the new financial year, so that the majority of the people employed by us in that independent capacity would then just move over to the new organization. It is still achievable. And obviously they would get their own budget, and any costs that we have been carrying would come entirely off. And we're still hoping that will continue. So 1st of November is just a few days away. We do know, however, that certain elements within the DOT have been trying to get delayed even further. But we spoke to the Deputy Minister on Friday, and he is going to make sure that this thing does go through on time. just again, the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, as I said, once it's created, will be totally and completely independent from the CAA. They will decide which accidents they investigate, and they will only investigate the major ones. And as is the international trend, is they will only investigate accidents that they believe, by investigating them, you will be able to get information and recommendations out to improve the overall safety system. If the cause of the accident is clear, the trend is throughout the world now to say we know why that particular accident happened, for us to go and spend millions to investigate it in order to produce a report that no one is really going to read. It doesn't make sense anymore. Let's concentrate our efforts on the ones that we're not sure what the cause was, and we need to go and find out what the cause was, so that we can prevent it from happening again. I just need to make the members aware as well that ICAO Annex 13 states, that's the annex to the convention, which we all are signatories to, that air accident investigation takes place purely for the purposes of determining the causes of the accident and not for apportioning blame. So the findings of an accident investigation, an air accident investigation report, may not be used in litigation or in any form of punitive action. If we separately as the CAA determine, not using the information gained by the investigation board, if we determine that there have been violations of our regulations that require enforcement action, we do it separately. And we don't use the outcome of the accident investigation. And this is international practice. Honourable Member, we certainly, as I mentioned at the AGM, we will be looking to get that money back from the DOT. One of the reasons why we did entertain it is that in the previous financial year, we received a grant of $21.75 million from the DOT. And in that year, we were asked to fund $4 million out of that. And if you recall from our previous year's debt, even with that $4 million, we broke even. And therefore, we were sort of, on the one hand, given some money, and on the other hand, some of it was taken back. That was the only case. We didn't receive anything in the previous financial year, and I don't think it is right, as you say, that we are funding this money, and we should be getting that back from the DOT. Certainly in this financial year, we will make sure that we recover 100%. In fact, to that end, we have invoiced the DOT, not just for what they budgeted, but for the actual full cost for the whole financial year. So they now are a debtor of ours. With regard to the levy, I'm very happy to report that every time a passenger flies into or out of South Africa or in South Africa, only of all of that money that gets collected, only 11 rand goes towards funding the activities of the CAA. And that 11 rand per passenger, in fact, makes up 75% of our total revenue. I think it's important as well for the airlines to break down exactly what is in what they call taxes on your ticket. And with the new Consumer Protection Act, they will be required to do that. The reason you don't see it on your ticket is because of the old tickets only had one line available in terms of the printout to lump all of the additional charges together. For most of the airlines, the majority of what goes into that particular amount is their fuel levy. So you may fly to London and back, as I sent my son on my Voyager miles to London and back. I paid 4,700 rand in taxes, of which probably 4,100 rand was fuel levy. And the taxes are the departure tax and the other bits and pieces that some of it goes to. In fact, none of it goes to ATNS, I don't think. Out of that, some of it goes. Anyway, AXA does collect quite a chunk of that. In fact, a large chunk of that goes to tourism. I know that of the money that AXA collects on their portion of the taxes, I think about 80%, and I've don't quote me on that. I think about 80% of that gets directed straight towards tourism. I'm certainly hoping that in the future, all of the taxes are shown as taxes and all of the levies, like fuel levies, are shown totally separately. The reason the airlines do levies is because their ticketing process is quite a lengthy one, and their fare-setting process is quite a lengthy one. They need to go to IATA, especially the IATA carriers, and they need to post their fares for a particular timetable, 6-month period. And they can maneuver more or less within a range, you know, of discounts and different types of buckets of tickets. But the fuel price, as you know, goes up and down all the time. And so in order not to change the base fare, the base ticket, they put the fuel levy, as they call it, outside. Now, it has merit doing it that way, because if the fuel price comes down, you can bring your ticket price down immediately. Unfortunately, I think we saw with the national carrier last year, they hedged at the higher price of $140. And so when everyone else dropped their prices, they couldn't because they were still paying the higher price. But I think that has been adjusted now. But it certainly should be transparent, and we support that 100%. In terms of setting the standards for engineers, we certainly do set the standards. We set the syllabus. We monitor the exit. In fact, we set the exams, and we do the licensing of the maintenance engineers. I would like to categorize the technical skills in the aviation industry. First of all, you have your pilots. We don't have a shortage of pilots in South Africa. What we do have is a shortage of previously historically disadvantaged pilots in South Africa. And that we'll address, I'll address separately. I produced a report for Cabinet last year. We did some research, particularly with regard to air traffic controllers, maintenance engineers and pilots. And the outcome of that report indicated clearly that we were hurting in terms of maintenance engineers because we weren't seeing young people coming into the profession. When we looked at the age of the licenses, average age of the people that we were relicensing every year, it was getting higher and higher and higher. So that indicated to us that there were no new entrants into this particular market. And we went on a campaign. We issued a press release. We had a press conference, which actually evoked quite a reaction right throughout the country. We also had discussions with the Air Force, with Danel, and with SAA, the three biggest trainers of technicians in the country, and the small operators as well. We spoke to the newly appointed director of TITA last year, explained the predicament, and instructed him, as much as we can instruct him, that he needed to approach the National Skills Fund as a matter of urgency to provide additional funding for the training of maintenance engineers. I'll give you an indication. SA has the capacity to take in 155 new technicians every year. The TITA were only funding 89 of those 155. And therefore, they had spare capacity. They just needed the funding for that. So that initiative is ongoing. When I was head of flight operations at SAA, we met with the Defence Force to address the common issues of technical training skills. SAA, as you know, for many years had a cadet pilot scheme, which was very costly. It was effective, but produced nowhere near the numbers of pilots that are required. And to expect the national carrier as well to train pilots from scratch, when it is such a marginal industry as well, when we were at SA, we felt that was something that needed to be addressed at a national level. And to that end, the Air Force and SAA started an initiative called the ATI, the African Training Initiative. That has progressed to a point of implementation right now. And when we were looking at the problems with the then Deputy Minister of Defense and senior officers within the Air Force and SAA, we realized that part of the problem and part of the reason that we were not getting a high success rate in many of the areas was the lack of discipline that we find in the young people today. And that's not only in South Africa, that's worldwide. I think it's just become the lifestyle that discipline is something that you leave behind in your kindergarten school. And to that end, the program actually takes everybody into the Air Force, either as a technician or as a pilot, and they receive all of their basic training under military conditions to enable them to get that basic grounding of discipline. And then after a couple of years, they will stream either into the civilian line or into the military line. And that program would then also be extended to the other operators within the country. But really what we do need is a national pilot scheme. It's been bandied about for many years. And in many countries, for example, France, you want to become an airline pilot, you put your application in, you go through a series of tests, and if you're successful, you are trained right up to airline pilot standard to enable you to go into and fly for an airline. And again, it is something we need to be looking at because only in that way will we ensure that we get people from the historically disadvantaged areas into the flying gap. And then similarly with maintenance. There has been a big drive. We've seen an increase in the number of apprentices in the scheme. So there has been reaction to that. I mentioned that we have this forum with the aircraft maintenance organizations, AMOSA. They have started a combined scheme as well for identifying vacancies within their whole area for the training of technicians. And so it is being addressed. I'm going to ask AT&S to respond in terms of air traffic controllers because that is their domain.
Counters maintenance story. And I think those other two colleagues of mine raised very similar issues relating to why can't we do things internally. We have an understanding that all our national carrier aircraft have been serviced and maintained in China. Am I right? Now, if that is happening, the question is, how do we check that to see that they're doing it properly in China? When in fact we should be doing it in our own country. That's what I'm trying to get from you as to why we cannot get our TITA able to train avionics engineers and maintenance engineers to be able to do all our aircraft instead of having to send it out to China to go and get done every time it needs a service. And then we don't have any control over it.
That's a very valid point, and I'm able to comment on that with my history and background at SA in particular.
Sorry, guys, I'm going to try to be short.
Okay. Essentially, the very heavy maintenance is done in China, which is the D-checks. They take up to 180 days to do. We used to do D-checks in South Africa. We used to do them for Lufthansa, for Saudi Arabia. That capacity was lost. I'm sorry to say that many of the engineers that used to work for SAA left the country for a number of reasons, not only those of being attracted to, for example, the Middle East by higher pay, and they went into other industries. I can't comment on what SA is doing to regain those skills. There are quite a few questions to answer, so let me just go to the point now of the SAA situation. We're responsible for aviation security, and the machines that you see at the airports, the X-ray machines, are there to detect explosive devices and weapons that might be used on board an airplane. They're not designed to pick up drugs. The cabin crew that went through at SAA went through a privately authorized screening facility at their crew center, which is audited by our people, but it is done to ensure that that no dangerous weapons and devices are put on board an airplane. The domain of drug smuggling is with the SAPS. It's as simple as that. The Civil Aviation Authority and the airport itself does not have, in any of the regulations that we have in place, any jurisdiction over drug smuggling. And so that forms totally and completely within the domain of the SAPS. And of course, the SA is a carrier. You know, SA is a carrier, knowing that that particular problem should have made provision that there was regular checks done on the cabin crew in particular with sniffing dogs and everything, all the other things that they do. And I do believe that since the last incident, they have changed their procedures quite dramatically with regard to that. With regard to the fire services, in particular in Cape Town, we did receive your queries that were received. We just discussed them extensively with AXA. We came down, we did an audit of the fire department, and we were happy to report, as we did in our report, that the fire service provision at Cape Town, and in fact at all of the major airports, meet international standards. We discussed the question of the HR issues within their fire areas with the MD of AXA. They explained what the particular problem was and how they were addressing it. But again, our mandate is to ensure that the fire services and the fire standards of our airports meet international requirements, and that they do. If you declare a Category 7 or Category 6 status, you have to be able to do that on a 24/7 basis, and our audits have shown that they are capable of doing that. Whether a disgruntled employee wants to go to the press and make big of it to say that they are horribly understaffed, you see it in all spheres of industrial relations. Unfortunately, people don't get their way, they take it to the press, which very often have a willing ear. But we are convinced that the standards are there. And I may say, in the air link accidents, which I'll get to very shortly, the on-airport rescue services were there literally within minutes. And it was a very difficult area to find, and that was all for airport. The question with regard to the numbers of who we license is in the annual report, page 32 and page 33, broken down in full demographics. With regard to the question of SA Airlink and small airports in particular, it is the airport operator's responsibility to ensure that the airport has got sufficient navigation aids to enable that service to meet its requirements. So Tata, unfortunately, was the one that was mentioned, has not put the facilities in to enable that aircraft to land in bad weather. It's as simple as that. Other areas like Pietermaritzburg, Oraibi, have got very difficult terrain, and that is part of the problem of flying to the smaller airports, is that the town or the airport itself just does not have the money to put in place the required infrastructure. But we're very happy to report that new technology is enabling us to do let downs, we call it. In other words, the pattern that you fly in bad weather to line you up with the runway, to see the runway at a certain height, is we're moving away from ground-based aids to airborne-based aids and using satellite navigation and onboard equipment. So that process is going, and we're busy rolling out a program together with ATNS at the moment to give us the capability of going into these airports when the weather is not that great. It still won't give us the capabilities like you would get it at Cape Town, but it certainly is a lot better than having nothing. With regard to the Airlink accident, again, as I mentioned, that is investigated independently. We've produced an interim report. We know that the right-hand engine developed a technical problem. We know that the left-hand engine on impact was not delivering any power, which would indicate that either the crew reduced the thrust on that particular engine or shut down the wrong engine. So that report has been released. We were able to determine that literally within an hour of accident happening, which is why we didn't issue a report saying we need to investigate the technical aspect of this particular aircraft. We knew that up front. Why that happened? Exactly what were all the factors that caused that particular situation to arise, or what we've been investigating at the moment, or our investigation team. And there are many factors that contribute towards an accident. But unfortunately, that did result in a fatality. It was a survival accident. The captain died from severe injuries to his upper torso in particular. I can report that he was not wearing his shoulder harness. Which was rather crazy. That will come out in the official report. But it is probably as a consequence of that he actually sustained the injuries worse than his co-pilot, because they were in very much the same situation. So it was a survivable accident. With regard to training of previously disadvantaged individuals, we do take it very seriously. I have a department of 12 communications and marketing people. They conduct about 80 sessions a year right around the country at every single event where you have lots of young people. They go and put up a stand, they show model aircraft, they've got brochures that get handed out, they have little questions and answer sessions with prizes. And we do that in conjunction with a lot of the other organizations. You'll find ATNS as well have stands at these particular events. All of the air shows, we represented extensively. And so we have been, for a number of years now, actively been putting forward aviation as a career, all aspects of aviation, not only being a pilot, being a technician, being an air traffic controller. We actively support all of that. The one question was, how has Australia progressed since the audit was done? The answer is we don't know, but we certainly assume that they have progressed to probably where we are, because once they got their findings, they would have had to put a plan in place, we call a corrective action plan, and would have had to go through the actions of fixing the things that were found to be wrong. So yes, we certainly expect Australia to be up at the top, because that's what they are. But even having said that, I think what we have achieved in the last couple of years is quite extraordinary, and I say that because of the feedback we're getting from ICAO itself, to say we really have taken this very, very seriously. And to do it, we did require the political will. Of no doubt, without the political will, we would not have achieved what we have done. With regard to the number of crashes, we actually showed that the number of crashes have declined significantly in the last 9 months. In fact, it's probably about now the last 10, 11 months. Every single aircraft accident that takes place is reported on the front page of the newspaper or on the radio or on the television. If you take into account that, I think the numbers were that we've had in total just over 10 fatalities, 10 people dying, with the millions of miles and kilometers that have flown, and the hundreds of millions of kilometers that are flying, aviation is still by far the safest means of travel, even if you are traveling in a small aircraft. It unfortunately is something that does attract the attention of the media. We get more fatalities in the morning in Johannesburg, I think, in our roads, in one morning, and this is over a nine-month period. So I think from that perspective, aviation is doing very well. Final question was about spares manufacturing. These aircraft are manufactured overseas, that we operate. They're manufactured mostly in Europe or the United States, and the manufacturers make the spares. Sometimes they outsource the spares, but you've probably heard of pirate parts. Now, we don't use pirate parts in the aviation industry, and that is because every single part on an aircraft is manufactured to the highest tolerance and to the highest level in order to make sure that it is completely safe. The minute that you start manufacturing something which might look the same but hasn't been manufactured according to exactly the correct specification, it will fail. It's as simple as that. And we can't manufacture the hundreds of thousands of parts for all of the aircraft that are flying in the country in South Africa, because it will mean that you'll need to manufacture maybe one part every 3 years. And you require a huge amount of machinery and jigs and tools and everything to actually manufacture that part. So that's why you need to buy it from the manufacturer. We do buy it through a local distributor, though. So we don't import directly from overseas. All of these aircraft, especially in the smaller type of aircraft, manufacturers have local agents. We buy through the local agents. And if they have a BEE program, then we bring that into our specific thing. But up until now, we've really excluded that as a BEE perspective. We've taken that as being offshore. Similarly, with regard to an airport like La Mercy, I can give you an assurance, even though I'm not AXA, but we do oversee the standards of the airport and make sure that they do meet the requirements, is that everything that can be manufactured locally will be. So the building plumbing and the fittings and all of that will be sourced locally, except maybe the tiles. But when it comes to specialized equipment, navigation systems on the airport, lighting systems, again, those are very, very specialized. You cannot have an industry manufacturing this very, very highly specialized equipment for one-off airport. You need a company that will sell dozens of these over a period of a year in order for it to recoup its investment. And unfortunately, with the size of aviation in South Africa, we don't have the ability to design and manufacture this equipment. Having said that, though, in the industrial offset programs that have happened, from the military and the civilian purchases, there are parts that are manufactured in South Africa. For example, the gearbox that's on a 737 engine that comes from the consortium that manufactures the engine CFM for the engines used on the 737. The gearbox is manufactured in South Africa. So we do take part in offset programs, industrial offset programs, and that's how we get involved. But I think it's basically because of the low number of specialized equipment that we don't tend to get involved, certainly at the high level. And I think that was the last question.
Follow-up question. Just need a yes or no.
Okay.
I just wanted to know when I asked the question, do you, in your list of pilot training, do you have black women?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Any follow-up question? Any follow-up question on the responses that have been provided by Captain Jackson? Honorable Crooked?
I think I understand that you have at the air shows and that we have all these people around. But basically, we get back to the same thing. The majority of the previously disadvantaged people come from rural areas. And this is why I would say the education facilities would be another avenue to it. Just a comment.
We go to, we're at a school, in fact, about two schools every week, somewhere in the country. And we have been targeting the rural areas specifically.
Okay, but when looking at the report, Captain, when looking at the report on your promotion of aviation, on aviation careers, there are other provinces that you have not yet covered, because Mpumalanga, yes, don't know whether it's Limpopo is part, but there are provinces that have not yet covered. I think what Honorable Lucas is raising, it's a genuine concern, because in most cases things are happening in Gauteng. So when things are done in Gauteng, then at the end of the day people think that they have covered all the provinces. I think we'll appreciate as the committee if those programs can be strengthened to all, to other provinces, especially rural provinces, because we're talking of rural development. How can you develop people from the rural areas if we don't bring them on board on such programs? Then secondly, while I was looking generally in your report, in writing the report, you are not consistent. You know, I used to say in Mpumalanga while I was a member there that departments or public entities, when they want to confuse members, they use percentage. Then we don't come with calculators in our committee meetings. 40% of what? 100%, 100% of what? I was just looking at the report talking about inspectors, 100% inspectors. When looking at the performance results, all inspectors, you know, it's very much confusing, because as committee or as parliament, you're playing an oversight role. We need to make sure that you have been able to achieve your target. So if in other places you use numbers, in other places you use percentage, at the end of the day we become confused. I think there's a need for consistency in writing the annual report. And the other thing that I wanted to lastly comment on is the issue of the employment equity. I've realized that you've got three people with disability, but maybe it can be clarified as this committee whether you've been able to reach the 2% as compared to total staff establishment, and also whether your infrastructure, are they disability friendly? Because you can employ those people, but if they're not supporting programs to assist them to work in that particular environment, at the end of the day, it will be a futile exercise. Again, I was also looking at your executive members. I think you have also a challenge of appointing women.
I don't know, maybe you can indicate to this committee what challenge are you experiencing, although maybe aviation is just one of the skills, can I put it in that way, but what challenges are you experiencing in really recruiting women to be part of the aviation sector? Then I think other questions have been asked by members. In your report, what I wanted to understand again, you have talked about something that the board has approved, a new stress plan. Can you get an explanation on that one? Whether the stress plan that has been approved by the board is the one that you are using now, because according to my understanding, once the stress plan has been presented to Parliament, that stress plan must not be interfered with. Because when making the oversight, we're looking at that particular plan. So if there's a new plan or that stress plan is being reviewed or changed, it means that it must be retabled because we're going to have another stress plan while the organization has got a reviewed stress plan, which we're not aware of. Maybe you can be clarified on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just so that I'm clear in my mind, when you're referring to consistency in reporting numbers and percentages, are you specifically referring to the annual report or to my presentation? The annual report. Chair, we will certainly look at that. I think we have tried as far as possible to get numbers because I think we agree with you that percentages don't really tell very much. But we will certainly concentrate on that. With regard to disability, we employed a lady towards the end of last year specifically who's been tasked to look at our disability profile. We do have some challenges. We don't want to just employ somebody as a switchboard operator because they happen to be blind. We want to find meaningful employment. To that end, in fact, we held two disability workshops together with the Disabled Persons Association, and they did a theatre for us. That all of our staff saw that sort in two sessions, so we are very much aware of it. And we're working with them to identify the people that can work in the organisation. We're sitting with a problem, and we're aware of this. Is that we currently house in two buildings that we're renting. The leases run for another 5 years. It is not possible to modify the building. We've looked at it. Even if we had the money, we cannot modify the building. The disabled, for example, toilets are on the first floor. And if the elevators are not working because of a power cut, we're not able to get those people up to the first floor. So it is something we've addressed actively. Our second building has been modified to ensure that we have ramp access and all of that. But it is something we take very, very seriously. And our target and our goal is clear. I will hopefully be able to report in the future that we not only meet our required target, but we'll exceed it. With regard to women in aviation, we have a specific program called Women in Aviation. Throughout the world, aviation for many years has been male-dominated, and I think it is just a legacy of the war years. Aviation started, commercial aviation really started after the Second World War, when you had thousands of male pilots that were trained and then went into the aviation industry. Likewise, air traffic controllers and the maintenance engineers. So for many years, it has been just a factor that has been a career and profession, either as a pilot or a maintenance person or air traffic controller, to a lesser degree in air traffic control. But that is what has been the tradition. And I think also, it's not being a maintenance engineer is not a very attractive profession for many women. You need to get your hands really dirty and your face full of grease. But having said that, the targets are there. There are women that are being trained. as pilots right across the board, and as engineers and maintenance technicians. And certainly there's no barrier to entry. People will employ any woman that has the qualifications and that wants to do the job. With regard to the strat plan, in my presentation, I said it was the strat plan as approved by the board in November 2008. 3-year strat plan. The one that was tabled is the one that we're following. So we don't have any change to our strat plan. It is in place, and it runs through 2009, 10, and 11. No change from the original strat plan.
Do you want to make?
Yeah, I just want to make an observation, Chair, if you don't mind. I think that, you know, we've got a lot of little things here which we need to follow up, and I'm just wondering how to do it. And that is somebody here from the department. But my major concern as legislators and people in Parliament looking at oversight is that we've got a problem with our legislation where the department is directly involved. And we have to, from this committee, send a very strong message to the department to say that they've got to sort out these anomalies in the Act. You're aware of what happened with the Road Accident Fund Act. We are still sitting today, 4 years down the line, without it being implemented because there was some part of it that was wrong or legislature wasn't allowing the regulations in this case to be amended. Now, that impacts directly on whether we're going to have a safe aviation industry, whether we get licensed again next year or not. I mean, it has. It's got serious implications because one of the criteria is to have that board, in fact, in place. Now, we've given that a fait accompli, but in fact, it hasn't happened. And Captain Jordan now talks about November. It was October. Now, I don't think we're going to get that board. Let's be realistic. Because you've got to advertise people, you've got to find people, you've got to employ them, you've got to put them into place, and you've got to structure them. And the department is responsible for that. Can I please, Chair, from this committee, send out a very strong message that we want to report back on that issue as to why this board is not going to be appointed and what plans they're doing to take that. And if there is any legislation amendment that we need to do, then we need to tell them about it now so we can sit at night and if need be get the legislation passed to be able to affect what your mandate is, Chair. It's a very worrying effect that I see creeping in from the RAF. Now we've got it in the amendments. We did those amendments last year. We thought we'd done them very thoroughly. We had law advisors with us all the way. Now these problems are arising. Why don't we know about them?
I think procedurally we're supposed to have, I don't know how national works. Procedurally when meeting with the public entities, the department is supposed to be part of the meeting so that whatever discussions that are taking place, they can be able to take that into consideration. Are you representing the department? Can you respond on some of the issues raised?
Thank you, Chair. The points raised by the honourable member will be noted and they will be taken to the department for implementation and to make sure that the anomalies that appear on the Act are addressed adequately by the department. But with regard to the implementation of the CA Act, we had a meeting with Captain Jordan as the directorate within the branch public entity oversight, and the same issue was raised, and it was addressed with my principals at the department, and the response that I got was that there are processes in place to ensure the implementation of the Act timely. Thanks.
I think we need to reserve some of the comments because I think in a few weeks to come we're going to meet today with the department because we want the accounting officer to just give us a response so that at the end of the day someone will be accountable tomorrow if that is not implemented. Colleagues, can I then take this opportunity to thank Captain? Captain, I appreciate the work that you are doing as an entity. There's a lot that you have done
and also there's still more to be done. I think working together will be able to make sure that really the mandate of SACA is being executed. Thank you very much. Members, we're supposed to have a meeting with 18S from quarter past three to half past five, but there are other parliamentary activities that are taking place at that time. So we'll have a 5-minute break now and come back and continue with HNS. Then after the meeting, we'll have finger lunch then so that we can proceed to the chamber. Thank you very much. Can I have the break for 5 minutes?
We're not going to meet with them at 3 then.
No.
Can't be. Because that's a bit unfair. Really do us justice, you know. I mean, they got like half an hour or so to do their report. I'm just wondering whether we can't get them back or something. I know it's important that we get the feel of what's going on, you know.
That you
said another day? I'm either suggesting another day, or alternatively, we meet later, even this evening. I don't know what their flight arrangements are. Can we not get venues? What is the problem with this? I mean, we can duck out of Parliament, surely.
Members, can we talk to the proposal, Mamia? The issue of the HNS, we're supposed to meet, according to the program, we're supposed to meet HNS from quarter past three up to half past five, but due to other, I think members have received correspondences about other activities that are taking place between that particular time. So we're proposing to engage TNS now, then until 2 o'clock. Then 2 o'clock we'll break and go, for the city. Then there's a proposal from Honorable Member Farrow that if possible, why can't you meet them? Why can't you meet them late today? Or maybe we give them another date. I think better another date, because if we meet them later, for instance, I have a study group to attend to at about 4 o'clock. I don't know from 4 o'clock to when. But also what we need to take into consideration is the parliamentary program, which is too tight. As members are aware that we've got many entities that we're supposed to deal with as this committee, but I thought that 2 hours will be enough for us to engage the HLN. Honorable Thomas?
No, Chairperson, I think your suggestion was correct to say that let's take a very short break and meet them. I mean, they have also traveled to here. We need to appreciate that on the understanding that we should meet them today. If there are things that need to be followed up, which we will identify out of our meeting with them now, we can then arrange to meet them again at another time.
Two proposals on the floor.
Mine is not too tight. I'll join you later. We'll go out for a break and then go somewhere else and come back.
Honorable members, can you assist me? I'm saying we've got two proposals. One is that either we meet HLS late today, which means after 5. The second one is that we continue with 18 as we have the short break, continue with 18 as if maybe there will be some time constraints, then we can set another time, but it will be just a short time just to engage them on follow-ups and whatever. So I want members to entertain those two proposals. On the apologies and whatever, I think we need not to entertain that. Must we continue or we give 18 as another date? Or we continue after 5 today? Continue after 5 or another date or we proceed?
Commendable, Madam Chair. We actually.
Allow members to.
Okay.
Member.
I want to align myself with the proposals that said we continue the meeting now. Honestly, having to continue the meeting later will be a serious inconvenience to majority of us because it was not in our personal program. But if we are to say we are not going to meet them now, then what do we do with the 2 hours that we have now? We will be debunking from the task that we are supposed to execute and achieving nothing at the end of the day. So we'll be having a monitoring program when we have done something. So I propose that we settle for this session to begin now after what you have proposed.
Okay. So there's a proposal that we continue. We have 5 minutes break. Sorry. And continue with our meeting. ATNS, are you ready? Is there something that you wanted to say?
No, Madam Chair, I just wanted to say we should actually be able to fit our presentation within 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, and there will be sufficient time as well for questions.
Can you break for 5 minutes and then come back again? Thank you.
Not here, but here, my other committee gets lost. No, I've been through two, but I mean, from the that.
Colleagues, can we start with our meeting? Can I then take this opportunity and give it to the CEO of AT&S, Mr. Patrick Lamini, to present the scenario of AT&S, the performance results. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you to the honorable members of the committee. We certainly hope, Madam Chair, that it won't be a long presentation, but we believe that actually it will be concise enough and sure to give a good picture of what AT&S is all about. With me, Madam Chair, I have on my left hand side Mr. Mohamed Mayat, who is the executive manager in charge of finance. And on my right hand side, I have Ms. Bonnie Dibate Masego, actually. Dibate Masego. She is the executive manager in charge of circuit delivery, which is the operation of the year. In terms of our content, we'll be looking at ATNS at a glance, the vision, mission, and strategic imperatives of ATNS, the airspace that actually we manage, and then actually covering our strategic imperatives, which is like playing a leading role in the development of air navigation services in Africa, playing and using leading technologies to the benefit of our clients. Then we will then cover our financial results for 2008-2009. We will then highlight our key challenges as we move forward. We will share with you the business concept, which actually encapsulates what ATNS is all about and the areas that you want to cover in the business going forward. We will also then share other initiatives open above which is contained in the business concept. And then we'll cover somewhat in terms of what we're covering and looking forward. ATNS is a company actually that used to be, we used to be actually part of the Department of Transport as a department together with Civil Aviation and AXA before actually we were commercialized and then established in terms of the Act 45 of 1993. We provide services and infrastructure in full compliance actually with the International Civil Aviation Organization standards and recommended practices as well as actually under the oversight of the CAA. Their regulation and technical standards. Our statutory service provision actually covers the en route service as well as actually the terminal approach as well as actually the aerodrome services, which is actually the airport services at the airport. We cover the 9 upper airports in terms of the act, plus we also cover 12 non-upper airports, actually we call regional airports. And all in all, actually we cover in total about 21 airports in South Africa. We as ATNS provide an aerospace satellite communication network which services about 28 countries in Africa, predominantly as well as some countries in the middle and eastern state of the Middle East. So this is actually through our satellite network, we call them the SATEC VSAT network, which is actually covering the satellites for the 13 satellite countries as well as actually the NAFISAT. Also, again, the satellite network actually that communication network that covers from the northeast part actually of the continent right up to actually up to Saudi Arabia in the Middle East. We will be able actually to show you actually on the map actually how actually when which country we shall recover with our services. Our mission, vision, and strategic imperatives, we say we want to be a preferred supplier of air traffic navigation and associate services to the African continent and surrounding regions. And our mission has been to provide safe, orderly, expeditious, and efficient air traffic navigation and associate services. Our strategic imperatives is continuous improvement of our safety performance, because, Madam Chair, we do strongly believe that actually our business as ATNS is about safety in the airspace. We also want to become a transformative organization which invests in its people, provide efficient air navigation services which meet the needs of our clients, maintain long-term financial sustainability, play a leading role in the development of air navigation services in the continent, and play and use leading technologies to the benefit of our clients. Geographically, actually, our space is about 10% of the world airspace that we manage. It could be the continental airspace of South Africa, as well as the oceanic airspace. As you can see there actually, on the map, which is almost halfway to Brazil, and halfway to Australia on the east, and right down to the South Pole. So that equates to 10% of the world airspace. In terms of the airport, actually, that's what actually we listed on the right hand side, the airport in which actually we are operating, which is Cape Town, George, PE, East London, Durban International Airport, Virginia Airport, Peter Maritzburg, Richards Bay. We go right up to Polokwane, and the Rustenburg area, the Milan, and the Rustenburg Airport, Mafeking Airport. We go up to Arlington, etc., etc. When we say we want to play a leading role in the development of air navigation services on the continent, we actually, at the request of IATA and some key airlines that actually fly into South Africa, from predominantly from Europe and also on the continent, they found that actually that some of the airspace that we're flying in actually were becoming extremely dangerous because they could not communicate with the ANSPs on the ground when they get to the other airspaces, and hence they could not actually be able actually to make sure that the navigation is safe and actually they could be able actually to know who is flying at what level, so that actually they could be able actually to avoid unnecessary media collisions. And then together with IATA started actually discussing with us if there was a possibility that they could be able to deploy some of the technologies. And we then deployed our satellite network, which covers the SADC as well as the northeast of Africa, which was also able to interconnect with the secular region, with the Francophone countries on the western side of Africa, for the African continent. We know that there was a study that was done, Madam Chair, in terms of the upper airspace control center for the SADC region. There has been a ministerial meeting, actually, and there has been a treaty that has been signed by the SADC ministers of transport to say, well, we need to start looking at how can we make the airspace within the SADC region more efficient and seamless, and then so that we can then be able, actually, to have a much more cost-effective flying within the region. So then they started looking at this possibility of a single upper airspace center, which is very similar actually to the notion of the single European sky. So there was a steering committee chaired by ATNS. We then actually submitted the recommendation to the committee in Namibia in May this year. The ministers actually made further recommendations to try actually and see to see actually as to where can we locate the headquarters of this entity of the center. Because actually when we look in terms of the study, we also found that it would be quite feasible, and this entity would be able actually to fund its own infrastructural needs and developmental needs. And so now actually we're just waiting for the direction and the leadership actually of the SADC Minister of Transport in terms of our way forward. On the screen there, you will see, Madam Chair, that you will see the green, I think the color efficient sometimes in the chair. That is green on the SADC side. That is our efficient communication network that actually we have deployed. And you see the crisscrossing actually, so the interconnection within the SADC as well as actually the red one on the left hand side is the Asekna region. It's not our network, but it's more on the Francophone countries. But our network communicates that to make it easy for the aircraft when they fly, the information could be actually be able to pass through that city. On the blue side, on the eastern side, which is not east of Africa, is where is our NAFISET network that we deployed as well, and it covers, so it goes right up to Yemen and Saudi Arabia in the Middle East. And this, Madam Chair, actually, the industry has appreciated very highly because it has brought about a great deal of safety in the airspace of those various countries, because actually it has made the communication a lot more easier between the air traffic controllers on the ground as well as actually the pilots in the air. On deploying and using leading technologies to the benefit of our clients, we have actually recently completed our safety case and we've given it actually to CAA for approval, and we've obtained that. For the operational use of the wide area mass saturation surveillance system, and we've also deployed the advanced surface movement guidance and control system at Doha's hub as well as the Cape Town International Airport. We have actually chosen the two airports because these are the airports actually that are about the busiest in the country, and two that actually tend to have visibility problems at certain times of the year, where actually sometimes you have the fog sitting right actually on the able actually to clear aircraft when actually they cannot actually use the DC if it's safe actually to clear aircraft for landing or takeoff. We have also installed a secondary radar at George, which will also help in terms of the coverage as well as the safety area, because we know actually the terrain around George can be quite tricky for flying. On the 25th of September last year, Madam Chair, I'm happy to announce that we were able actually to introduce the reduced vertical separation minimum on the African continent as a whole, which actually had an impact of doubling the SS capacity. Actually, what this did was for aircraft flying above each other. Before then, they were supposed to be 2,000 feet apart. But with that, actually, the RVSM, the reduced vertical separation minimum, that has been reduced to 1,000 feet. So we then actually said, because we've doubled the capacity within the same airspace. So that as well has gone actually very well, and actually it has been heavily and highly appreciated actually by the airlines within the airlines that are flying on the continent. We also are busy in the process actually of finalizing the site acceptance testing of our KMU, which is our Central Airspace Management Unit, which is an air traffic flow management tool. That actually we are really, really looking forward to implementing before the World Cup, because it will be a very critical instrument to make it easy for us to manage the slot allocation for aircraft to fly between airports in South Africa. Say, for instance, an aircraft wants to fly at a certain time from Cape Town to Johannesburg or Cape Town International Airport in Joburg. Then they will apply for a slot. The system actually would be able actually to allocate the slot without any human intervention. I must also highlight, Madam Chair, to the Honourable Committee members, that this actually the integrated nature of the system actually is the very first in the world. We have actually been receiving a lot of requests from our international federal NSPs actually asking if we could be willing to extend such a technology actually to cover their areas as well. Because this system also has the capability of being able actually to identify the storm cells in the building and the rate at which they're moving, the direction that they're moving, and then be able to say what would be the most efficient routing, given actually the development of the storms in the airspace, and thereby actually being able actually to efficiently navigate the aircraft and safe accordingly actually when they're in the air. Or we can then be able to say, keep all the aircraft on the ground until actually the storm actually is cleared, and then we are able actually to know exactly when it's going to clear and when it's going to be safe to let the aircraft actually fly. It also caters very well as well with the flexible use of airspace arrangement that we have with our military, South African Air Force, because what actually happens is when South African Air Force wants to use a portion of the airspace, they will advisors that actually they need a certain airspace, and then we would look at the impact of that airspace that they're looking for and see actually if it impacts on the efficient operation of our airspace in terms of the commercial users of the airspace. We would go back to them and suggest if they need to move an airspace that they are used somewhat in any particular direction or in terms of the height. We're working very well, Mr. Chairman, say, with the Air Force, and actually, again, internationally, they could not believe that actually we were able actually to agree with our Air Force that actually we will be responsible for the airspace above the 21,000 feet. And then as ATNS, we control all that airspace, so that the military, when they need an airspace, they just discuss with us and then we allow them actually to use it. And then they give it back once they're finished doing it or using it, and then we then actually allow the operation to continue. Because while they're using it, we then declare it actually as a restricted airspace and not actually any flight would be allowed in that restricted airspace. It's the same thing actually during the Confederation Cup that actually was happening recently, but we were actually able actually to restrict a lot of around the stages that were staging games. We had actually to, together with CAA, agree that actually that airspace actually would be restricted. Anyone wants to fly through that airspace had to apply to the Air Force, and the Air Force will give clearance and permit it. Otherwise, it would not be allowed actually to fly there in the interest of safety for the guys actually within that airspace. Coming to the financial results, Mr. Chair, no honorable members, you will see that actually for the year to end of March 2009, our total revenues actually were 656 million rand. This is 620 million rand for the year before that, which ended in 1 March 2008. Our operating expenditure was 488 million rand against 445 the year before that. Profit before interest and tax was 62 million rand versus 103 million rand a year before that. Profit before tax ended up on 84 versus 75 the year before. Net profit after tax was 61 million and the year before that was 46 million. Our asset base is sitting at 1,172,000 and the year before that was 1,073,000 rand. Our total liabilities were sitting at 424 million rand, that's 386 million rand the year before. Our net working capital, which is the ratio between our current assets and current liabilities, for the year to March actually we're sitting at positive 3 million rand, versus our net current liabilities of 39 million rand a year before that. That, Madam Chair, is very, very important and critical to understand that actually continuing on a net, on a negative net working capital actually was threatening the solvency of the organization. Because if it continued in that one, it meant that actually our ability to meet our financial commitment was beginning actually to be threatened. So we had actually to do what a lot, but you will also see as we move forward what actually we were, what we're looking at and how actually we're looking at resolving that issue. Because we are a regulated organization by the economic regulator. And there is a particular model actually which has somewhat hampered our ability actually to be in a much more safer environment position. Because it is important to also to highlight that actually we have a confident agreement with the banks in terms of the loans that they advance to us, which says our gearing ratio has got to be below 60%. So our debt cannot actually be more than 60% of our total assets. So, and continuing that position would mean that actually we have to go through to the financial houses actually to borrow more money, which actually will threaten that covenant. And we have highlighted that to the regulator, we've highlighted that to the Department of Transport. We have actually worked very well with the Department of Transport in terms of trying to address some of the financial issues actually, because we've been approaching the Treasury together with the Department of Transport. We have also met with the regulator to look at how actually they can look at us. Because in terms of the past 3 years, Madam Chair, we had the 3 years actually our tariff changes. The year before that was minus 0.6%. The other 2 years actually it was less than 2.5%. So we actually then really hampered the organization and the regulatory model of pre funding is quite a challenge. But I will cover that as I move forward. But in terms of our financial results, we ended up with a profit of 61 million versus 46 million in the previous year. There again, it covers the tariff change, which was 2.5% for the year to March 2009, again, minus 0.6% before that. And the return on capital employed was 9.86% versus 11.92% the year before that. Our capital expenditure for the year to March was 147.7 million versus 223.7 million rand. This is because of our three types of infrastructure, which is the communication infrastructure, the navigation infrastructure, as well as the surveillance infrastructure that we need to deploy throughout the country to make our work at the low level of our transport dollars and all that. Our gearing ratio as at the end of March 2009 was 43%, and the year before that it was 38%. You can see it's creeping up to the 60% limit that we cannot go beyond because of our covenant agreement with the lending institutions. On the non-financial results side, our safety ratio, this actually measures the number of safety incidents. For our target for end of March was sitting at 3 safety events per 100,000 movements of airborne movements. This includes all the flights that are airborne in our airspace, plus the circuit movement around the airport as well as the training movement. But what we achieved was 3.74 per 100,000 movements of oil. In terms of our air traffic services, the staff complement for until March was 448. These actually are air traffic controllers. We categorize them as STC, ATC, like a tower air traffic controller. Then we have senior ATCs, those are senior air traffic controllers working at the regional airport. Then we have the principal air traffic controllers, those are the guys that then work on the radar approach as well as actually on the area, which is for the en route. Those actually are the most experienced and the high caliber guys that actually we're talking about. And the total in absolute terms is about 184 for the current year in that category, the approach and the area air traffic controllers. The technical services is 103, and we had 99 a year before that. Then the other, in terms of the support functions, we have 347 against 315 a year before that. We have a better scheme, where we source ATC vessels across the country. We have 123 for a year to March, 125 rather, against 118 a year before that. Our equipment performance and the reliability of our equipment, our communication network infrastructure actually is sitting at 99.64% availability. Our navigation infrastructure is sitting at 98.49% availability. Surveillance, 99.77% availability. Again, this says actually we cannot afford not to have a reliable infrastructure in our system. Therefore, it's got to achieve those kinds of percentages, which means the downtime is going to be absolutely kept to an absolute minimum. On the BEE side, we achieved, in terms of our operational expenditure, 49%, which at the end of March 2009, that was our target, 49%, but in terms of what we actually achieved, was around 49% on the OPEX side. On the CAPEX, which is capital expenditure, we have set our target for the year at 10%, and we achieved actually a CAPEX on BEE of 42%. On the employment equity, or on the African Indian and Coloured, we had set a target of 51%, and we achieved 53.13%. In terms of our key challenges going forward, it's very much around the core and critical skills. This actually is around the air traffic controllers as well as on the technical side. But on the technical side, we're quite happy that we have been able to produce the requisite numbers. But on the air traffic control side, we lost about 150 of our air traffic controllers, the most experienced, to the Middle East countries, because of the competitive strategy that those guys have made. We have also actually put up retention schemes to try and keep these guys in, but there is a process that we've undertaken to look into that one, so that if we stabilize the environment, because in the case of Namibia, they are actually going to at some point resign and mask, and actually that led that the airspace of Namibia actually is extremely dangerous for the flight. So we do not want to go there. This is a matter that we've discussed also with the industry and the users, so that actually there is a lot actually that we need to do. We will be able actually to report a very good progress going forward in the chain. On the safety performance, we have set ourselves a target of 2 safety vents per 100,000 airborne movements, and currently we're sitting at 2.39, and we are very confident actually we'll be able actually to achieve the target that we've set. On the financial sustainability, we are busy together with the Department of Transport talking about the regulatory model. The regulatory model, Madam Chair, says for all the CAPEX or the infrastructure spending that you're going to be undertaking, you will have actually, as a company, have to pre-fund those projects. In other words, raise your own finances, approach the lending houses, and then get them actually to fund. But once only actually you commission this infrastructure, then you'll be able to get compensation from the users. But there is a paradox there, Madam Chair, that I would love to highlight to the committee, because in terms of the pre-funding, the Act says we are not supposed to be making profits. And And at the same time, that's why actually the regulator is very strict in terms of how much actually they are allowing us to have. But at the same time, for us to be able to prepare, it means we need to have a very strong balance sheet. And to have a strong balance sheet, it means actually you need to be able actually to make profits. So a very good profit, so that then you can be able to get cost-effective funding from the financial houses. So that is actually becoming quite a challenge, but we are actually rigorously engaging both the department as well as the regulator to see actually how, what would be the best model actually that we can look at. On the Soccer World Cup, we are actually busy actually putting our plans together to make sure that actually we stay in a successful World Cup event, because we do believe that actually for the tourists that will be coming here, they will be coming by air. And for us, we believe that we have a critical role to play in terms of that by making sure that we have got the sufficient numbers of air traffic controllers. We have also come up with a stopgap approach, which actually says we will actually be going outside and sourcing air traffic controllers from other ANSP countries or other air navigation and service providers in other countries to bring them here for a short period. We will assess them, validate them, and then we'll allow them actually to work just for the World Cup, and then they can then go back to go to their country. So it's not going to be a cheaper option, but that's our stopgap over and above actually the aggressiveness that actually we have undertaken in terms of training our own air traffic controllers. As the members are aware, that actually the airport at Lamin should actually be up for commissioning. We have all agreed with all the other stakeholders, which talks to the airlines, the APSA, and other users. That actually by on the 2nd of May next year, we will actually have that airport operational. So we are working towards that. We have put down our infrastructure there, and we are quite positive that actually we will be able to meet the deadline. So actually, in the month of November, we are actually changing our new procedure to the National Airspace Committee, which is sitting in November, to authorize, and then when we get that approval, then we'll be able actually to have the airport ready come in next year. Our business concept, actually, we believe that when you look at the business committee, we'll tell you about ATNS and what areas actually ATNS is looking at. We think our strategy will be to focus on the air traffic and navigational service needs of the air traffic management community, primarily in South Africa as well as the rest of the African and Indian Ocean region, which is ASEAN in terms of ICAO, and ultimately in selected global markets. We're talking about the likes of Brazil and Asian markets. We will develop a thorough understanding of the global air traffic and management community with emphasis on product and service offerings, technology development, and customers in order to effectively respond to the needs of our selected markets with innovative and relevant air traffic and navigation service solutions. We will source, develop, market, distribute, and support a complete range of air traffic and navigation services solutions that meet the expectations of access, equity, safety, and efficient reliability environment. Sustainability, affordability, thereby supporting our customers as well as the ATM community at large. We believe that it is imperative that we stabilize and enhance our air traffic and navigation service provision in South Africa in order to create a platform from which we can leverage strategic partnership, our global influence, as well as harmonized technologies and methods to become the leading ANSP in the Africa region to secure our future growth, revenue, profit, and relevance as a provider of choice. Over the long term, we intend to expand further into selected markets around the globe, whilst at the same time expanding our range of services in air traffic that are appropriate for market needs. Our business model will be supported through attracting, developing, retaining, appropriately rewarding a diverse and motivated team that has the right skills, experience, commitment, and drive to implement the strategy, thereby actually creating a win-win solution. The effective implementation of this strategy will ensure a well-equipped resource base, enhance financial sustainability, and support the global air navigation and safety plan. In terms of the other initiatives that we are embarking on, we all understand that the climate change and the clean technologies in terms of the environment are really becoming or gaining a strong momentum. We have started a currently underway, which will be finished within this financial year. We have also commissioned a study by Deloitte and Touche to look at the various areas in terms of our research and development, because in terms of Section 111D of the Income Tax Act of South Africa, it says actually if we come up with innovative and creative ways of doing business, they can actually be able to allow us up to 150% tax deduction. So we're looking at how we can exploit this kind of initiative that the government has put in place to actually enhance our creativity and innovation in the manner we can do our business. We're also looking at the remuneration strategy, as I said, that they are losing these air traffic controllers to other ANSPs around the world. Because globally, Madam Chair, I would like to also highlight that there is a global shortage of air traffic controllers. In America alone, actually, each year they need about 2,000 air traffic controllers. There really is a serious shortage of air traffic controllers. That's why we believe that ourselves, if we want to destabilize the industry, we need to make sure that we look at how actually remunerating this guy, which actually is going to be much more sustainable. And again, the training is becoming very critical. Because actually what we've done, we effective 6th of August this year, we have actually sent some of our students to the airport for training. We are sending another batch actually in the month of November and another batch in the month of March. This actually also shows actually how close actually we've been working and how well we've been working with the airport, because they are also certified by CAA in terms of the training of the students. And we are also looking at sending some instructors. We are looking actually at African black instructors to send through to Airways New Zealand in the month of January for training there as well, and make sure that they go to bring them in, because we really are quite challenged in terms of we are not able actually to have the black instructors. So that at least as we say we need to bring up these kids, they can also be able to have people that they can easily relate to and be able to approach actually in terms of trying to make sure that they get the necessary assistance as actually they are going through their training program. Looking forward, Madam Chair, because actually incidentally the next 5 years become actually our training our permission period. Sorry. For the next 5 years, we can see that there, in terms of the maintenance, a bulk of our capex for the next 5 years, 2010-11 to 2014-15, about 1.12 billion rand is going to be spent primarily on maintaining the existing infrastructure. The capex is going to be to new acquisition. It's going to be only about 168 million rand, actually, thereby totaling a 1.297 million rand for the next 5 years as our capex expenditure, which we've actually submitted in the month of September to the regulator to pronounce for implementation next year, effective first year next year. For the next 3 years, in terms of capex, maintenance is going to be about 710 million rand, 81 million rand is going to be on new capital expenditure, and 792 million rand will be a capital expenditure for the next 3 years. You can see in terms of the graphs there, actually, that actually the bulk in terms of the maintenance is going to be the communication. The light blue is on the new capital expenditure, but the dark blue, the dark blue actually is the maintenance part. You will see that the navigation is not that much. The bulk actually in terms of will be the communication as well actually as the display system. This is actually our permission application, which I may share with the committee, that we have actually applied to the regulator for the next 5 years of our permission period. The tariff increase for 9, 10, 11.5, that's what actually we were granted by the regulator. 10, 11, we have actually applied for 33% increase in terms of our tariff. For 11, 12, 18%. 12, 13, 6.7%. 13, 14, 5.5, and we actually said we will actually be able to do with 0, 14, 15. The reason why actually we had actually to apply for that was because anything less than that actually will throw us beyond the 60% coverage agreement that we have with our lending institutions, which then means that we will be breaching our covenant. Which then means that actually we will not be able to keep on providing a safe and reliable service in terms of actually our airspace. So, but the earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization in millions for 9-10 is focused on 158 million rand, 10-11 200 million rand, 11-12 362 million, moving up to 469 million rand 12-13, and 557 13-14, as well as 575 million rand for 14-15. The net profit in millions, 28 million rand forecast for the end of this year, 30 million for 10-11, 129 million rand for 11-12, 193 million. 283 to 36 for 12, 13, 14, 15, respectively. In terms of the targeted return on capital employed, the percentage term is looking at 10.4%, 11.6%, 12.1%, 12.5%, 12.3%, and 12% going up to 14-15 financial year. The return on capital employed, excluding work in progress, because the regulator not actually taking into account the work in progress. We actually focus on 4.8% return for this current financial year, moving up 5.1%, 13.9%, 18%, 18.5%, and 16.3% up to 14.50%. The capital expenditure per year, we're focusing 192 for this year, that's what we budgeted for, 185 million rand for 10-11. 277 million rand, 11-12, 369 million rand, 12-13, 343 million, 13-14, and 282 million rand, 14-15. The gearing ratio, which is our capital structure, we will have 49.7% again for this year, 50.1%, and that one will shout up to explain that even though actually we have a debt increase of 23%, we will still actually be able to have a gearing ratio of 51.1%. And the following year it moves up to 52, then it starts actually to come down 51.2%, 42.4%, and 30% in 14-15 financial year. The new loans as a percentage of CAPEX would be 97%, 86.6%, 93.8%, 86.1%, 64.5%, and 50.7%. Our current ratio, which is actually the ratio of current asset to current liability, would be 0.8:1, where actually the cardinal rule says actually on the current ratio is supposed to be 2:1, but at least you can still do with 1:1. But we are then looking at 0.7 for our first permission year, 10-11, 0.8. 11-12, 0.9, 1. Only in 13-14 actually that it goes to 1.1 and 1.2 in 14-15. We have also applied, Madam Chair, to Treasury in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework. For the next 3 years, in terms of our capital expenditure, we were actually out for 535 million rand for which we actually go towards maintenance of our infrastructure. And on new CAPEX is 171 million rand. The total actually to us is 707 million rand. But if we were to look at taking into account the industry, we think 149 million rand is coming from the industry. In terms of the new infrastructure, 707 million, 856 million rand actually will be the total. Take into account our application to Treasury plan as well what the the critical issues looking forward, we're looking at the regulatory regime, which actually tends to focus more on the return on capital employed versus the key indicators. Because sometimes it's like actually trying to say the temperature actually tells you that actually everything is fine in the body of a human being, when actually there are so many other things that you need to at to make sure that the body actually is very much in order and operating at efficient levels. The pre-funding model actually, which says we exclude your work in progress, please go and find your own funds to fund the projects, and only thereafter you get to be financed by the users. We're finding it extremely difficult because we are not allowed to make profits, and therefore it becomes difficult to strengthen our balance sheet. Actually, then we do not actually capital ratios, that's what we're also saying. We're worried about the financial implications, the solvency risk that are associated with weak carriages, current ratios. Yes, there's actually a continuous pressure in terms of our OPEX, which is predominantly around the staff cost, trying actually to retain the critical skills. The training and development of controllers, because actually we really are looking all over, even in terms of actually trying to train our actual controllers overseas, over and above actual what we're training within our own facilities. Negotiations of more environmental improvement issues with communities, that's what actually we're busy in actual with the LAMET. You all know the nature that there is about 6 million brown soils that come to the Lamezi area just adjacent to the airport every summer, actually, for breeding. And then during winter, then they fly with their babies, actually, back to Europe. Actually, I'm trying to get the bird rider to be able, actually, to see where these birds are so that then you can be able, actually, to navigate and move the aircraft accordingly without, actually, impacting on these birds and environment. We've been quite successful, actually, in that area. Yes, again, we're also looking at improving our local content in terms of what we are procuring from our suppliers. We don't tend to be an international company because actually we are the only company that uses this kind of equipment. But we try to look at the local content also with our suppliers. That brings me to the end of my presentation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO, for the presentation. Members, can we interact with the presentation? We want to comment, input, question.
It's not even a question, it's just something of interest. I'm sorry I had to leave, but I'm happy I came back. I missed something. What is ATNS?
ATNS, through Madam Chair, is Air Traffic and Navigation Service Company. We are actually responsible for the management of the airspace in South Africa, and as well as actually this is continental South Africa, which actually goes in accordance with the borders of South Africa, as well as actually the oceanic airspace above the sea, which is halfway through on the eastern side to Australia, and halfway through on the western side to Brazil, and right down to the south coast. I do have a slide actually that shows exactly actually where it is. I won't be long. Let me just quickly show for them. That actually is the airspace. You will see that it is on the continental of South Africa. And the one in light, the light green.
But the blue, the green, the dark green is continental South Africa, and the one on the side is the oceanic, and here is the southern tip, the south coast here at the bottom. And the right on that side is actually halfway through to Australia in terms of that oceanic. We need to be managed on behalf of IK, the International Civil Aviation Organization.
When actually they are in airspace and make sure that actually we do not end up with a collision when actually the passengers are flying on the aircraft in our airspace. Yes. We are the company that was established in terms of the Act 43 in 1993.
Honourable Member Lucas.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I must also say it's been a very good presentation, and the question of our transformation must be put aside because you can see what you're doing, and we really appreciate that. Just a few things. There's nothing really serious. The concern about the 2010, because there's going to be a lot of people, not only traveling in the regular flights, I'm sure there'll be extra flights coming in from all places and that year. Will you be really prepared? And in connection to that also, on the other hand, what is language a problem with French and Portuguese and all this when you're controlling this year, with training? does that become a problem? And I must say that about 2 weeks ago we were landing in Cape Town and they put it on automatic pilot. I must say we have really had a soft landing. You would never say. So now I understand what was happening. Compliment to the ATNF. We also know that something must seriously be done, Madam Chair, about this poaching of people. You spend money, you train a person, and then you haven't got sufficient money to keep the person. And this is the difficulty, because this is international trade. They can work anywhere, and they are required all over, because there are shortages all over the world. So I think we should try and have some way of assisting that we improve the working conditions so people can't come and take our people away from our country. And it's also encouraging to see that there's a working relationship with the military, because the military does not always give instructions. You never know when they're going to perform. So I'm glad you're contacting that. Thank you.
Members, any comment? Question? Do you want to come in, Commissioner?
Thank you, Manager. With regards to the World Cup, we're quite fortunate that actually the number of movements, given the recession that actually has been experienced throughout the globe, it actually had an impact on ATNS of actually moving us back to 2006-2007 in terms of actually the actual movement, which then actually has given us extra capacity to be able actually to handle any increase. That actually means that actually, but over and above that natural advantage that we've had by the reduction of the movement in our airspace, we are very aggressive in training our own air traffic controllers, because we have come to admit that the biggest influence that we have as an organization in terms of the pipeline is on aggressively training our own air traffic controllers. And so that if the guys want to leave and go somewhere else, because actually they are approaching the twilight years of their life, and they want actually to leverage actually on the demand that is there globally, but we will make sure that actually we continuously actually keep the bulk within the organization, and at the same time actually making sure that actually continuously actually produce the air traffic controllers, so at least that we are never found actually being without the adequate numbers of air traffic controllers. Yes, we're very much aware that the bulk of our tourists actually will be coming by air, and we are very positive that actually we'll be able actually to cope with the demand that we actually will be presented as a result of staging the World Cup in South Africa next year. On the language issue, ICAO actually has made it easy for international flying, because they made English actually the language actually of communication. They actually have set certain levels that actually every state actually, when actually it comes to air traffic controllers, they can actually be able to converse with their pilots when actually they are approaching. Whether those pilots are coming from Russia or they're coming from France, they all actually speak English. Very concise and specific. Because they really discourage conversation. Because one, it blocks the system, and two, it might end up actually creating miscommunication. So that English actually is the required language for all air traffic controllers throughout the world. I'm happy to hear that actually that our instrument landing systems, our ILS actually Kenya, made it possible actually for the aircraft actually to land on autopilot and it landed smoothly. It makes us very proud that actually we are able actually to achieve this kind of achievement in our country. And the poaching of staff, again, as actually I said earlier on, it is a critical issue, but actually we're trying to pull all stops to make sure that we are able actually to adequately deal with this number, so that we were not actually found in a position where actually the staffing issue becomes actually a serious operational risk on the side of the ATNS. And the military relationship that we have, actually, it's an envy of the world, I must say, to you, Madam Chair, that actually people still do not understand how actually we achieved it. In Australia, they even asked us to come and share with them how actually you achieved it and how can they also try actually and get to that level. Because actually it makes managing the airspace very inefficient actually if you do not have that kind of mature relationship
with the Air Force. Our victory has really actually gone in leaps and bounds. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Children, I think you are 9 months in that in the ATNF. But it seems as if you are 6 years in that entity. While I was looking at your report, you said you need a cash injection. But while I was just looking at your capital expenditure, I think there was a slightly underspending. What is the reason? Because when needing capital, you can't underspend. Treasury will say you don't have capacity to spend. Why do you need more money? Or the department will say you don't have capacity to spend. Then and on the other side, you're saying you need the cash injection. Why did you fail to spend the allocated amount? Can you get the reason for that one? Then again, you indicated that the 60 learners who benefited from the winter schools. You know, in each and every, I don't know when I'm sitting in the Rural Development Committee, because most of the activities, I'm repeating myself again, that are taking place, are focused in housing. In which areas where do you maybe request the Department of Education to identify maybe 2 or 3 learners per province to be part of that particular program, to avoid a situation whereby one sector of the country is almost benefiting from each and every activity that are taking place, disadvantaging those from the deep rural areas. Then on the issue, I understand that you are giving this the bursaries. You have given bursaries to students to go and train as a traffic controllers and other related careers. Again, maybe if we can just be briefed. How did you identify those students? How do you make the applications accessible to them? Because in most cases, most of these things are appearing in city press, Soweto, and whatever. While a person from the deep rural area does not have access to that particular newspaper, we've created some tools, some systems in place as parliament that we've got constituency offices where members are deployed. We can share that information with members so that the members can assist with other structures to identify learners, so that at the end of the day, all the learners throughout South Africa are benefiting from whatever program that is in the entity or in the department. How did you identify them? Then I've also not identified the slow improvement in women representation. Around about 33.1, and the next year 33.2. Again, on the issue of people with disabilities, seem to have a challenge. What is the problem with regards to that? Because there's a policy that is in place, you have to comply as ATNF. Then I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Manager. Starting with your very last question on what is it that we're doing to attract people actually with disability into the organization. It's an initiative actually that we started in this current financial year. We really want to aggressively drive that initiative because we do believe actually that there are a lot of areas within ATNS that actually can actually be able to attract people with disability, train them within the system, and make sure that actually that we get the best out of them within the organization. It's a new initiative actually in terms of consciously going out and attracting these guys. We've already started, but I'm very positive that actually come the end of the financial year, we will be reporting a very a good progress in that direction. On the business to students, in terms of the air traffic controllers, the technicians, that actually we get for bursary versus the rural students. In actual fact, what actually history has shown that the student actually that tend to cope and then they tend to apply themselves quite well, actually tend to come from the rural of the rural. We did actually discuss very extensively in terms of our access to the rural areas. But yes, we do admit that in the past we were very much focusing on the radio metros of this world, focusing on the very much urban medium, as opposed to really making sure that you go out, because students from the likes of Mpumalanga, the Eastern Cape, KZN, from Limpopo, they also equal are the destinations that we need actually to try and get to, because those are the destinations that have got the hunger to succeed, because they tend to have what I call the intrinsic motivation, is to say, I want to achieve better than actually my own parents, which actually was the same motivation actually that I personally had as well, growing up actually in the rural area of KZN and having title and chief, to say, I would love to be a better person and really to identify with these children. We have actually made an effort actually to really go straight up to those. I think one of the schools that was also visited earlier on this year was a school in Limpopo, but actually that school actually has come to the top 10 in the South African schools. I think it was the only historically black school actually that actually has made it, then being a high school. But we really are very much open to ideas as well, and to also certain schools actually that we need to achieve. But there is a very conscious effort actually that is being made to make sure that we go as far out to deep into the rural areas actually as possible. Because we believe that's where actually there is talent, and that's where we need also to make these kids aware that there is a profession called actually air traffic controller or technician within the aviation industry. Because I mean, these are the guys actually that could easily, within a space of 2 to 3 years, be people actually that are earning in excess of 500,000 rand or 200,000, 250 to 500,000 rand. In 5 years' time, actually, they could easily be earning in the region of 800,000 rand. So it's a very attractive profession. It's just that actually we need to really work much harder in making sure that we attract these kids and make them aware that actually there's a profession like this. But I would really, really appreciate actually to be much more conversant actually with the system of the parliamentary system that you have, which actually would enable actually to have access to those kids in rural areas. I think it will help us a lot. On the learnership, yes, again, this is about making sure that we get out to the rural areas again, because the emphasis actually is the rural kids. Because those are the kids actually that have got less information. Those are the kids actually that actually tend to have the drive actually that we need so that actually they can also be able to succeed. Yes, again, we will definitely make sure that, because these ones were very much around the Gauteng schools, the Tembisa schools, the Boksburg areas, but we would love actually to make sure that we really access the rural areas. On the cash injection, versus the underspending. Actually, the underspending was more actually on the overlapping of our projects in the financial year, and the invoicing by the suppliers, because they don't actually perform the job, but the infrastructural work actually was still in progress. When the project is finished, that's when actually we will see more actually which are coming through. But at the end of the financial year, we had actually to make sure that we only account for the work that was actually done, and anything that was not done on the project actually could not be invoiced within this year. That actually would be invoiced within the period that actually it was performed. So, but the cash injection actually really was an injection actually that we would love to have as an organization to try, or alternatively for the regulator also to understand that we cannot compromise safety. And we cannot actually be saying, here is an organization that is responsible for the aviation industry in terms of facilitating this industry. And yet, we talk about risk in our airspace, because that will scare people actually away, because in our safety will have been compromised. So we strongly believe that actually for us to be able to move forward and for us to be able to be within the 60% covenant loan agreement that we have with the bank, we will actually either have actually the regulator giving us the request that actually we have asked for, or actually then asking the department actually to see if
manufacturers, they can be able actually to meet us somewhat. Because the, actually the industry does appreciate the air, and they do understand that actually we are actually becoming very cash-strapped as an organization, and that actually we do need money. That's what they said, but they do not have actually the money themselves because we're going through a difficult period. And again, it was because the manner in which actually we are being regulated is actually a challenge to the organization. But we are engaging the regulator as well on that one. We are quite positive that maybe we'll be able actually to find the solution, because we've been actually having a very good assistance from the Department of Transport as well. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much for the responses. I think that is the reason that why we need the department to be here, because of some of the issues, they have to be part of this meeting, hear your frustration and think about it, so that at the end of the day they can see how best they can assist you to be able to execute your mandate. But nevertheless, I think we'll hear your concern. When meeting with the department, we'll be able to engage the department on some of the issues that need the departmental attention. Colleagues, when looking at our agenda, I think we're done with 18F. Thank you very much, CEO, for the presentation. We're supposed to move to item number 5, but we can't adopt the minutes of the previous meeting. We are not correcting, so we'll defer the minutes to the next meeting. Without the waste of time, there's finger lunch that has been provided. We can assist ourselves after this meeting. I therefore declare this meeting. Before declaring, let me thank the officials for coordinating this meeting and also members for being part of this meeting. Without you, this meeting was not going to be a success. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
We take the chairperson.